I'm going to call the Tax Committee to order. Charlie, is the tape running?
Yes.
Okay, we're going to take Reps. and Morgan. And Reps. and Morgan, we don't have a quorum yet, so we can't move your bill, but we're going to go ahead and take it. I understand you have to, some of your testifiers have to be somewhere. The committee's in order, folks. Reps. and Morgan.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. Since we don't have a quorum, we won't move the bill yet. We'll quickly go through an explanation. House File 3788, and I do have a delete everything amendment that will get the bill in order, but we'll wait on that. This provides a sales tax exemption for a facility, an aerospace defense facility in my community in Burnsville, an expansion. And it is paid for by conforming to federal tax treatment on real estate investment trusts. I have with me here two testifiers, Carl Lind, who is the facilities director at Goodrich, and also Craig Ebling, who will come down to talk from the city of Burnsville to talk about Goodrich. So I'll turn it over to Carl Lind.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Lind, was it?
Yes, it is.
Okay, welcome.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Carl Lind, Director of Facilities for Goodrich Sensors and Integrated Systems, located in Burnsville and Eagan, Minnesota. Thank you for giving us a few minutes of your time to hear our facility expansion opportunities that we're contemplating. Goodrich Sensors and Integrated Systems employs roughly 1,425 people at facilities in Eagan and Burnsville. Goodrich Sensors and Integrated Systems provides a broad range of systems to the aerospace industry, including smart probe air data systems, electronic flight bag systems, security and surveillance systems, microelectrical mechanical systems for high-performance sensors and actuators. A few of our customers include Lockheed Martin, Boeing, Airbus, Embraer, Bombardier, Honeywell, and ATK. United States government is one of our larger customers, along with NASA. Our competition is worldwide. Goodrich has approximately 132 sites around the world, employing 23,000 people. Goodrich has grown over the last few years and has opportunities beyond our abilities to pursue to support growth. Goodrich Corporation is considering a multi-year expansion at Sensors and Integrated Systems in Burnsville, Minnesota. In order to meet the demands and competitive cost targets, Goodrich would like to partner with the state of Minnesota and city of Burnsville with the objective of lowering the overall costs associated with a potential expansion. The potential project would begin in late 2010 and continue beyond 2019 with further potential out there. Potentially, the business could expand by 167,000 square feet, add 240 new positions, and spend nearly $240 million in real and personal property through the 2015 to 2019 timeframes. The areas of growth, of job growth, are primarily in the high-tech fields: software engineers, electrical engineers, mechanical engineers. These fields require educations in microelectronics, sensors, and test areas. However, the needs of all of our 27 product lines at the site will be addressed as we grow. I thank you for your time and consideration. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Lind. Mr. Ebling, nice to see you. Welcome to the committee.
Good to see you, Madam Chairman and members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to speak today. My name is Craig Ebling. I'm the city manager from the city of Burnsville, 100 Civic Center Parkway in Burnsville, Minnesota. I come to speak just a few seconds to comment on the status of the Goodrich Corporation in Burnsville, and they are an exemplary corporate citizen of our city. And of course, as a city manager, I always worry first about money. I can assure you that they are a good and welcome taxpaying member in our city, but more than that, I would cite a couple examples of their further integration into our community. The first I would cite is Rose Park. Rose Park is in a 15-acre park that the city has used for 20 years, totally donated by the Goodrich Corporation. During that time, by the way, they also continue to pay taxes while we utilize this facility for parks purposes. My kids played soccer there. I've spent many a rainy Saturday afternoon there. I would also cite their engagement in the city from a benevolence standpoint. The Goodrich benevolence arm of their corporation has been active in various city causes throughout the city, and we have come to rely on them over the years. Beyond that, numerous people from the corporation, including Brian Gora, their President has been involved with our Community Action Council, now referred to as 360 Communities, in assessing and working on various community problems that engage not only the government, but also the school districts and the faith community, and a more diverse approach to all community activities. So, in summary, I would underscore the fact that Goodrich is an integral part of our city and a very welcome and highly regarded corporate citizen.
Thank you, Mr. Ebling. Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It seems you have a quorum. Perhaps you want to move the bill and the amendment.
We're still missing someone. Okay, I guess we do. Would someone like to move Representative Morgan's bill for him?
I'll move the bill.
Representative Reinert moves the bill. So it's before us, and now if Representative Reinert, if you could move the amendment, I think it's the DE1. Is that correct?
That's correct, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, I'll move the DE1 amendment.
Representative Reinert moves the DE1 amendment to get the bill in the order the author would like it. Discussion. All those in favor say aye. Aye. Opposed, say nay. The amendment is adopted. Representative Morgan.
Madam Chair, thank you very much for the consideration. We ask that this be laid over for possible inclusion in the tax bill. This will create jobs in our community. This will help create jobs in the state and help get our economy going again, and I appreciate your consideration.
Okay, thank you. Are there questions from committee members on this? Representative Reiner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think it was Mr. Lund. Just a couple of quick questions. You said an additional 240 jobs. What's the size of your current workforce, and what would the average wage of those new jobs be?
Mr. Lund.
Currently employ 1,435 employees in Burnsville and Eagan, Minnesota. That involves three facilities. The average wage is between $60,000 and $70,000. My last check, it was $62,000. That's a base wage. Does not include the overtime or additional benefits.
Thank you.
Further questions? Anyone else from the public who'd like to testify for or against this bill? You know, I'll just say, members, it's unfortunate, as I expressed to Representative Morgan, and I think he agrees, too, that this Representative Morgan heard about this a couple days after the governor signed the jobs bill, which would be this is similar to Representative Reinert and Representative Paymar's bill that were in there. So we're going to try to see what's left yet this year as far as an omnibus tax bill goes, because this bill costs money, and Representative Morgan has paid for it in this proposal. But I think everyone's going to have to think about that. I do have a question. I heard in Senate testimony it was stated that this bill was the exact same as what was given to Thompson West Reuters now, which I don't believe became law. And my understanding is what Thompson Reuters requested and what this company is requesting are very different. And I'm wondering if Mr. Michael can just remind me if Thomson Reuters had the same proposal as this, if you can recall. Mr. Michael.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my recollection of the Thomson Reuters request was that they were also asking for a sales tax exemption on their purchases of construction materials and equipment that does not qualify, you know, for the manufacturing exemption. So I think this is analogous to that proposal, and it is narrower than the Representative Paymar's and Reinhardt's, because it does not include all of the Job Z type of exemptions.
Mr. Michael, did Thomson Reuters, though, I thought they had a TIF district in their proposal as well, or at least originally.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, they also requested a TIF district in addition to the sales tax exemption, if I recall correctly.
Okay, so members, you know, the equipment is already exempt from the tax through the refund process, and so this would go beyond that. Mr. Ebling, is this in a TIF district currently in the city of Burnsville?
Mr. Madam Chair and committee members, the TIF, this area is in a TIF district that will be expiring at the end of this year.
Okay. Okay, further questions? If not, we're going to lay this over for possible inclusion. Oh, is this a testifier on the bill? Yes, please. Sure. I called for that, but maybe you didn't hear me. Anyone for or against? Welcome, please. And if you could tell us your name for the tape.
I'm Bob Tamman from Sudan, Minnesota. I wasn't aware this bill was coming up until my wife and I rolled in last night. I'd like to speak against the bill. I'm a Vietnam veteran. I served on the ground in Vietnam in 1965. At that time, one of my assignments was to take ammo counts before we went on operations. And I was amazed 45 years ago at the amount of firepower we had. As I look back, on that war, 58,000 of my fellow veterans died, and roughly 2 million Vietnamese. Robert McNamara, one of the architects of the war, admits with regret that he thought the number was closer to 3 million, but I like to be conservative. And so I use the number around 2 million. That's 40 Vietnamese for every one of our soldiers that died. And I don't believe that trend has changed over the years of our military involvement in overseas adventures. It appears to me from my brief reading of this bill, the citizens of Minnesota are asked to subsidize military investments in Minnesota. Now, we have seen the character of states that have large amounts of military, and they tend to be southern states. They tend to have less responsible government, I believe, than Minnesota. Minnesota is a great place to live. I believe part of your prosperity might be because people like my wife and I, who are retired, choose to live in Minnesota with relatively high taxes, and we could take our pensions to a low-tax state. We live here because of the quality of life and the values of Minnesota. I know the defense establishment is very powerful. They like to have manufacturing facilities in every district, so they have some economic hostages to swing votes. I believe Minnesota would be better off that if they want their defense project, let them build it without subsidies from the taxpayers of Minnesota. Thank you.
Was it Mr. Hammond? Can we get your name correct for the...
Hammond, T-A-M-M-E-N.
Okay, thank you. Questions for the testifier or anyone else? Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This isn't in reference to the testifier or really, quite honestly, to Representative Morgan's a specific bill, but just in general, when we're doing these different tax exemptions, how is that recorded in the budget forecast? When they pay the sales tax up front, but then it gets refunded later, how do they make a note of that in the budget forecast? Is that something you guys...
Mr. Michael.
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, there is the Department of Management and Budget does enough as part of the forecast sales tax refunds, the main component of which is the capital equipment refund that manufacturers qualify on their integrated production process equipment, but they will also then forecast this, any of these other sales tax exemptions for building materials and in this case data processing equipment and R&D equipment and so forth. So if you actually look at the detail of the forecast document, there is a separate line for sales tax refunds that fluctuates, obviously, with the economy.
Representative Anderson?
That's it. Thank you.
Okay, Representative Downey, then Rod.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And for the representatives of Goodrich and anybody else who might want to chime in, I'm curious about the site selection process that you went through. How the Burnsville site stacked up against other sites that you considered, and how important this request is to your decision to actually locate this facility in Burnsville.
Okay. Thank
Mr.
you,
Lynn.
We have 58 acres in, Goodrich has 58 acres in Burnsville. It is approximately 25% built out. The last time the facility was allowed to expand by corporate ownership was in 1985. This is the first opportunity, and we are pursuing some immediate short-term expansions. Hopefully, with support, we can encourage future expansions.
Representative Downey.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So was there any consideration at the corporate level given to other sites and this one chosen for specific logistical or other, kind of competitive advantages, or is it just purely an economic decision? What's driving the decision to site the plant, and how important is this proposal to actually siting it in Burnsville?
Mr. Lynn.
We've been bringing forward options since 2006 for expanding our operations. Goodrich has been expanding around the world. The items that are being expanded in Minnesota are based on our core competencies here, the high-tech and educated workforce, the diverse workforce that's available, and the investment that's already in Minnesota.
Thank you, Madam Chair, so I'm going to make a statement and you can disagree, but so this plane is coming to Burnsville no matter what, and this is just an additional ability for Goodrich to have a more profitable and quicker profitability timeline for the expansion. Is that a fair statement? This is coming here no matter what.
The first phases are extremely likely to come to Burnsville. We're trying to encourage the future phases with our partnerships with the city and with the state.
Okay, Representative Brock.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And then also for the representatives from Goodrich, the focus has been on the defense side of things, but you also do commercial airline work, and do you still work with the space programs and things like that? What other types of business are involved other than just the defense side of things?
That is correct.
Please.
Goodrich in Minnesota, approximately 34% of the business is military. The rest is commercial, space, and propulsion industries. Commercial aircraft.
Representative Brown?
No, thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to make sure that the record was clear that it's not just a defense side of things that we're dealing with as well, just related to the business practices.
Okay. Mr. Eveling, where is the site?
I'm sorry.
It's the amphitheater site. Oh. And where is it related to the amphitheater site?
Madam Chair and committee members, the expansion site would be in our South Cross Industrial Park, which is south of County Road 42. Oh. In the area of Judicial Road, far south of the old amphitheater site.
Since you're here, Mr. Aveling, can I ask what happened with the, was it just the economy or the potential, was it a minor league stadium that was being looked at in Burnsville? What happened with that proposal?
Madam Chair and committee members, we've heard nothing from the proponents of the ballpark for more than a year. I presume that there are economic stresses that have entered into their decision making.
So, you know, I was thinking, Mr. Eveling, that you and I, Representative Morgan and Bloomington and Burnsville, Mayor Kautz and others, you know, maybe we should try to get that Viking stadium. Just kidding. Between our two communities, we've certainly got the
Madam Chair, on the record for that?
Representative Morgan.
Are you on the record for the Viking
stadium? No. Just teasing. Nice to see you, though. Representative Silver. Well, it, you know, since we pay for everything, we probably should get something, but generally we just pay for it and don't receive, but that's an editorial comment. We'll show you the numbers if folks want to review the fiscal disparities contributions and other things in Bloomington for regional projects. Mr. Eveling.
Madam Chair and committee members, we could find a place for it.
Yes, as could we. Okay, so thank you, Mr. Lynn. Thank you for being here. Closing comments, Representative Morgan.
Very briefly, thank you, Madam Chair and the committee, and thank you for being attentive to the travel commitments of our testifiers. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We're going to lay this over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. We want to get Representative Norton's bill done and then Representative Murphy. Representative Norton. And would someone like to move this bill?
I will, Madam Chair.
Representative Dietrich moves. Representative Liebling moves House File. We don't know. 2849. Thank you, Representative Liebling. Representative Norton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is one of the eight bills that is a result of the Small Business Caucus, which met all last summer and into the fall. Representative Dietrich was the lead, and Representative Rood and Representative Downey. So you have the three leads here in your committee. The concept for this was as a result of the testimony that we heard, which was time and again, Minnesota's a hard place to start a business. You can do it easier in Wisconsin. So what this bill hopes to do is ask the LCC to apply for the Carlson School of Business, or if that doesn't work and it looks like they're interested in doing it, we could go to the Humphrey Institute as well. But to do a comparative study for us, have the students do a comparative study of what it's like to start a typical small business, retail business, and a manufacturing business in the state of Minnesota as compared to the state of Wisconsin. And so as part of that process, we want them to look at it from beginning to end, the startup, including formation, financing, licensing, permits, reporting requirements, employment laws, state and local taxes, which is how we ended up here. So it is a comparative study, and an amendment was put on in the last committee, which is on the copy that you have on 2.1 and 2.2, that said if the grant is not received, LCC is not responsible for any further doings of this particular request. But it's a fairly forthright bill. I believe the Senate actually has expanded a little bit beyond Wisconsin, but at this point the House has stuck with the one state comparison. That was what we heard most often from folks, that it was easier to start in Wisconsin than the state of Minnesota. So that's the bill, and I'd be happy to answer any questions or represent the people as well.
And thank you, and Representative Norton, thank you, and thanks to all the folks who worked hard on the Small Business Caucus. I know Representative Dietrich and Representative Root and Representative Downey, who all sit on this committee, are the co-chairs. But I did ask for this bill to come here, members, and I'm hoping we can just vote it out. I wanted us to take a stop here because of line 1.16, and just to allow members of the committee to give feedback to Representative Norton on what folks might want to see here. If this goes forward, the House Research Summary really talks about the appropriation going for the regulatory, and that's not what it's here for. That's not the tax committee's work. But the bill asks that they're going to look at state and local taxes. And so this committee knows that straight-up state and local taxes, depending on how this study is done, would not include things like angel investor tax credits and things like that. And I think we would want them to be also looking at all the tax expenditures that are going on sort of offline from just plain old tax rates and, you know, what's the local property tax, what's the CI property tax, what's the corporate tax, that kind of stuff. And my concern just in this line is I don't know that this study would, folks would understand that we would want a review of that. If we're really going to look at comparing Minnesota and Wisconsin, then there's, you know, a menu of things, as we all know, that are in the tax expenditure, you know, jobs, all kinds of stuff going on that affects the tax climate of Minnesota. So I didn't have a language idea here. I just wanted us to talk about it. I don't know if it's maybe Mr. Michael could think of a quick addition on tax expenditures or something, but just feedback from the committee if this bill gets signed. I think it would be a huge miss for us to not include. Remember, we spent a lot of time debating the angel investor tax credit, and the whole premise was, geez, you know, we need it because Wisconsin's got it. This, to me, would not even take a look at that and many other tax implications. So thoughts on that, members, on what you'd like to see? This is our chance. Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think that's a really good point, and I would just say, what if we just inserted after the words local taxes, just say, and tax preferences? I like the word tax preferences because, well, you know, I think it's just a little clearer, although it's not the technical term that we use in statute. That might pick up the concern that you're raising. I think it's a good one.
Okay, and more discussion, I think, and we can ask Mr. Michael then to take in kind of what we're all saying here. That's, you know, definitely one way to approach it. Representative Downey.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think you raise a really good point, and there's maybe two components to what you say. I think there's the real and perceived, because people make decisions based on perception, and I think we hear oftentimes that the perception of tax rates is driven largely by the published rates and not kind of the realized rates. And so I'm wondering if maybe a better term as compared to trying to call out expenditures would just be to say the gross and net, so that you could actually look at the not just the particular components, but how those components all add together for a business into its perception of the gross tax rate and what it actually realizes in terms of a net tax rate. So I don't have any crisp language, but just a concept other than just calling out expenditures and preferences.
Representative Downey, I'll just react to that as Representative Norton thinks about everything we'll talk about here for a minute. I think that would be good. I don't know how we get that because I think that's proprietary information. I don't think a study would elicit that. But maybe if Mr. Michael could just react to that. I think you're talking about the marginal tax. You know, what's happening on the margin? Is that where you're going with that, Representative Downey?
No, I don't think so. There's our published tax rates, and you look at, you know, the 9.8%, and, you know, people have heartburn over that, weigh in all of the other credits and things in the particular circumstance that a business is in, and what they realize, kind of the net tax rate, is different. And I know that's kind of where you're getting at. And so there's two threads to what I'm talking about. There's the actual real number and the perception of that number when a business makes a decision, and that's kind of a reflection of what the published gross rate is versus what they actually realize on the net in terms of tax burden.
Okay, well, what I was thinking on that, though, I mean, here's where I think it's proprietary. If you're like the corporate tax at 9.8 or whatever, and then but you don't have any liability and you're depreciating or you're deducting off your business expenses, and you may pay zero, and we know, in fact, most companies do pay zero. If you just see that 9.8, to get that zero, I don't know how much of that is public information that we can actually see and how the net operating losses track over time. But before Representative Dietrich jumps in, if Mr. Michael could just maybe help us think about this a little bit, hearing Reps on Downey's comment there. Mr. Michael, is there a way for the tax committee to kind of get the information it's looking for?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, standard ways of doing this sort of analysis would focus on what are called effective tax rates to sort of measure the percentage of the business's income, for example, that's paid in tax, sort of without regard to what the statutory rate is, so that you really look at the sort of more of the bottom line effect. I would think, I mean, this is a very general direction where it just says and state and local taxes, and so it would, I guess, be up to both the individual writing the request for the grant as well as the researcher that's doing the study to use their judgment as to how to assess what the effects of those taxes are. You could add additional language that makes it clear, you know, more specific that you want this to focus on, you know, additional information, but you could also just trust that, you know, this will be done through the request process and by the researchers. So,
Representative Dietrich.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Michaels made two points that I wanted to make. I think that we have to trust the people who do the research, not to the extent that we allow them to do anything. But what I think we are doing is we are bringing the researcher down a path that I don't think was ever intended, and that is to study the tax climate in the state of Minnesota. That is not the purpose of this study. The purpose of this study is to take business A and in Minnesota and business A in Wisconsin or another state and compare the regulatory, the different levels of government that they need to go through, what are the costs associated with it, what are the timelines, what are and compare those two so we can actually see, is Minnesota a more over-regulated state to do business in? And so I don't want to get confused here. This is not studying the tax climate in the state of Minnesota. And if the researchers choose business A in Minnesota that happened to be a use angel investment, then they would need to pick the same type of business in Wisconsin that we're able to benefit from angel investment, because we are really trying to compare apples to apples and get some real specific data as to where the differences are in the two states, so that if we would choose to try to even the playing field a little bit more, we know where to go and where to zero in on. And if we did want to go in that way and go down a little bit more of a tax area, I think Mr. Michaels had a good point that I would recommend to Representative Norton, is that is taxes paid. And that's what we are trying to get at. For that type of business in this environment, these are the taxes paid versus the business in Wisconsin, these are the taxes paid. So I would just want to make a little bit of a warning statement here, and if there is any clarification, that it would be taxes paid. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Coles, David's Reiner. Representative Coles.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I think the exchange between you and Representative Dietrich is exactly why I think that, with all due respect, Representative Norton, we shouldn't be doing this bill. I think that this is a good idea. But I also, I said on the floor the other day, and I truly believe this, government doesn't exist to do everything that's good. If this is a good idea, if the Carlson School of Management thinks this is a good idea, they'll do it without us telling them to do it. And if they decide they're not going to do it, well, this bill doesn't have any, I mean, it doesn't say that we should. And so, you know, Representative Dietrich, I hear what you're saying, I hear what the chair is saying, and we have a dispute here amongst tax committee members about, you know, what should or shouldn't be in the study, and, well, if the Carlson School thinks that we shouldn't do the study, then the LCC doesn't have to do the study, and the LCC is supposed to check in with them and see what's going on. I just, Madam Chair, the bill, and Representative Norton, I mean, I think this is useful information for us as legislators, but to me, this is kind of one of those things that we want to say we're doing something when we're really not doing anything. This does not require that a study be done. It suggests that a study be done. And if it's such a good idea, and I happen to think it is a good idea for us to get information, but what's the point? Help me out here, because I'm hearing tax committee members reading this language differently, and we're arguing about it, spending a bunch of time when we'll do the study, or maybe we won't if there's no grant money, and I don't know. Are we just trying to make people feel good?
Representative Norton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, we're here in the Tax Committee because the Tax Chair had an interest in expanding this. As Representative Dietrich said, it wasn't necessarily a part of the original. We wanted kind of a gross comparison as we do this. I want to make it clear that I'm not here just for fun. I'm here because 3M and many other corporations said this would be really helpful, and because the testimony we heard at those committees, they're the ones that made some of the contacts for us, many of these business partners, because they feel this would happen, and to just sit and hope that Carlson School of Business or the Humphrey Institute will take this up means we may never get the information. This will assure that at least we've done the ask. If for some reason they choose not to do it, we have a way out, and we're not obligating anyone. We're spending no state money to do it. So it really is pushing the issue that our business community in the state of Minnesota said they want it.
Well, Madam Chair, just a comment to anybody from the Carlson School or the Humphrey Institute that's listening, please do this kind of work. As the representative for District 34A, the small businesses in District 34A, please do this kind of work. Help us make, but Representative Norton, if your bill passes, if it's signed by the governor, we may or may not get a study, and if we don't get a study, well, you know, no harm, no foul. And I guess we can say no harm, no foul in asking, but I don't think we should fool ourselves or anybody in the business community that this is going to change the business environment here in Minnesota, at least not in the near term.
We have four more questions. I just want to invite, if they want to, and if they don't, they won't, Mr. Hesse or Ms. Breakow or anyone who's in the audience who's interested in this to give us their thoughts. And I'll just tell you the reason why I do think it matters, and I think it's a good bill. I don't think it's a nothing bill. I think we should do this. I heard what Representative Dietrich said. The issue I have, though, members, is, you know, I'm okay with just striking taxes here, so we wouldn't have ever had to come here and not have them study the taxes, everything but. You know, there's a big long line here, a list of, you know, formation, accompanying, financing, licensing, permits, reporting, requirement, employment, regulation, and then taxes. Had it, if the study wasn't going to include taxes, then it wouldn't have come here, but if it's going to include taxes, the reason I think it really does matter is, for example, there are a lot of organizations that make these comparison studies on business taxes, and then they, oops, forget that, you know, this company got all this other stuff that isn't counted here. And I think it's a legitimate, either we look at it all or we don't look at it. And that's just the concern I'm raising. And I see the business community here. I'd love to hear their thoughts on this bill, but I'm not getting any sense they want to talk about it. Representative Norton.
Well, I do just want to mention and address Representative Cole's concerns. Originally, this bill had a spot for dollar signs. But, you know, given the current economy, it seemed rather irresponsible to bring forward expenditures at this time. So we found a way with some of our business partners to make those contacts with some organizations that could help us out to get the information we wanted, and that's why you have the grant application process in front of you. I would love to have put a dollar amount there and paid for it ourselves. We just simply can't do that in these tough economic times.
Okay, we have Davids, Representative Davids, Reinert Loon, Anderson Broad. Representative Murphy, I'm not sure if we're going to get to you before tonight, but we're trying. Representative Davids.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I guess I would take a little different approach from my good friend, Representative Coles, I think this is a fine piece of legislation, and I think we need to keep taxes in, because how can you compare what the costs are if you don't look at the tax mm-hmm. issue?
Right.
And I'd also like to, you know, I'm a big supporter of House File 2849. I ran on this issue, but I would like to ask Mr. Michaels, would a amendment for tax reciprocity fit in this and be valid, would you think?
Mr. Michaels?
You know what?
On this fine piece of legislation? Fine piece.
Madam Chair, Representative Davids, I think that's a separate study bill for another member.
Well, Madam Chair, Mr. Michael, would it fit?
Would it?
Madam Chair, just putting levity aside, I think there actually may be a slight issue because reciprocity does, in fact, affect sole proprietors and small business owners that live along the border. For example, if a plumber lives in Minnesota and does work in Wisconsin, or an electrician lives in Wisconsin and works in Minnesota, reciprocity currently makes it easier for that business to operate in the sense that they don't have to deal with the difficulty of both states' tax laws. But I think you would be sort of detracting from the core purpose of this study, which there's only a handful of businesses like that along the border. But yes, that would be a material impact on their operations.
Representative Davids.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, Representative Reiner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Not surprisingly, my point as well, but rather than suggesting sort of changes to the bill, which I think is a good bill, I would just ask the multiple co-chairs that are here to keep that in mind. I think if you're going to study the tax issue and you're going to talk about Minnesota and Wisconsin, I think you'd be remiss to not take a look at reciprocity along the way.
Thank you. Representative Loon.
Thank you, and I think this has been a good discussion. I guess in listening to Representative Coles, I could probably go either way. There may be a number of things that we talk about that are good ideas that perhaps could be accomplished through a letter with a number of legislators' signatures on it to the Carlson School or something. But be that as it may, if it's going to go forward as a legislative proposal, I think that's fine. You'll have the weight of the body behind it get it to that point and it gets to the governor's desk. But I think it's an important topic to study, and in participating in the Small Business Caucus, I did express an interest in having a few other states included, border states, to maybe provide a little more information through this study. But perhaps that'll happen. It sounds like the Senate proposal maybe has that included in it. But with regards to comments on the tax climate, and we spent a lot of time talking about the tax climate in the legislature, outside the legislature, how that affects businesses, job growth, our economy. And I think we would really be missing the point here to exclude any of that information. And I would support your notion, Representative Lincheski or Madam Chair, that we do need to look at all of those things that we're doing, credits or other things to try to attract business, as well as the overall rates, to have a clear picture in trying to compare apples to apples. So I think while you could disagree with the method, I think this is important information, and I think it is something we should try to get done if possible.
Thank you. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Norton, we serve on Workforce Development Committee together, and I'm just curious, was there ever any consideration to ask our Department of Economic and Employment Department to look at this? And I know in my conversations with officials from that department, they have a lot of this data already, and I'm wondering if we're creating more work for ourselves than what we really need to, and that the data's already been obtained for us, and that we at least could get a start on that. And I do think it is worthwhile to look at this data. I'm just wondering if we are looking for it in the wrong place.
Representative Norton. Thank you. This bill was heard in both Bioscience and Workforce Development and Higher Ed and Workforce Development. I do think that that you're correct that DEED does have some, but not all of this information. The comparative piece, they will have some of the Minnesota side information and probably a little bit of information on Wisconsin. And I do think the Carlson School of Business can and should work with the Department of Economic Development to ease their workload. So I don't think, because there's no cost to this bill for the state, I think that would be a recommendation that perhaps should go to whomever, the Carlson School or Humphrey Institute, as they take this issue up, to use information that is available as part of that work plan.
Well, Madam Chair, Representative Norton, I hope that you will join me in asking Representative Rukavina. Oh, he is here. Mm-hmm. I think this is something important for that committee in particular to look at, and hopefully that you are interested in doing that as well as our Commerce Committee, too, to look at these issues, to discover, you know, what information we already have, and maybe that can save us in going through the grant process. We can make it a more targeted request than just kind of this very broad request that we have right now.
Representative Broad.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Norton. I think this comes from good intentions. I'm an optimist, generally speaking, but my 8 years here have taught me to be a periodic cynic, and I'm going to be a periodic cynic just for a minute. It just seems to me that there isn't necessarily a need for the legislative piece of this, and again, I think the intentions of trying to get this information are really good. We do want to know what's going on in terms of our business environment, but we've been told over and over and over again by the businesses in this state of specific permitting requirements, specific regulations, specific examples, specific tax structures, specific access to capital issues, specific, I mean, we've been told very, very specifically related to what some of the known problems out there are. Yet, we have not chosen to act upon those specific suggestions. So the challenge that I see is it's great to have the information. I think that's good. I love facts. You know that. I love facts. I like having information. But if we don't have the political will to do anything with it, then it's no good. And so, you know, just the other day we had a great example on the House floor with Representative Erdahl. Had an amendment that would deal with something that we know is a problem. We know specifically that the permitting process is a problem. And he had a bill that would help us move that in the other direction, to actually help and to solve that problem. And yet we weren't able to come together on an amendment to move in that direction. And so I guess this isn't necessarily meant to be a criticism. It's just more of an editorial comment on the political will available. We have Public Strategies Group partner with 5 of the largest Minnesota foundations, and they were able to come together and put a report on the table that I thought had some great ideas in it related to how we fix, how we reform, how we redesign state government. That wasn't because we told them to do it. It was because they thought that from the standpoint of how we move forward toward to the right direction, they wanted to be partners in doing that. And so they, you know what, they just settled up and went. So, you know, I see we have growth, it used to be Growth and Justice, but Minnesota 2020 sit out in the audience with Mr. Smith, and, you know, are you still Growth and Justice? You know, sorry, my apologies. They could partner with the Freedom Foundation or the Free Market Institute or 5 of the largest foundations. It just seems to me that there's some partnership opportunities out there for people already who want to make sure that we're moving in the right direction. I think that these are issues where the right and the left can come together to find that common ground. I truly believe that. I don't like the false security of passing legislation and assuming that we've done our job. And so with that, Madam Chair, I'll turn off the cynic in me and just say, I know, it's no fun. It's no fun. But, I mean, we do have to send a message to business in this state, a very clear message. I think we started sending a message with Representative Dabney and Mahoney with your work. I think that was kind of some white smoke coming out of the Capitol. It was a good thing. But it's not just what you pass, it's also what you introduce. And day after day after day, we have bills coming through this body that are harmful to the prosperity for small businesses. And I just wanted to have the opportunity to vent and to talk a little bit about passing real solutions versus things that maybe are just good to do or nice to do. There's a lot of things that we have to do if we want to set Minnesota back on the track toward prosperity through having successful small businesses. So with that, really no need to comment too much more. Thanks.
Okay, and Representative Norton, I'm the one who passed out that amendment. We'll get to it after Mullery, Tilbury, Downey, and we can discuss. I asked Mr. Michael to draft an amendment here. So Representative Mullery, Tilbury, Downey. Representative Mullery.
Madam Chair, it's kind of out of time. It was a response to Representative David's wanting an election bill, and I'm offering anybody that needs election help my use deeds bill. You can probably explain it in less than 4 or 5 hours at each door.
Thank you. Representative Tilbury.
Madam Chair, I just have someone in the audience I'd love to
recognize. Oh, yes. I'm sorry. Representative Tilbury has a really important announcement.
Yeah, I have out in the audience a German foreign exchange student who's stuck living with me till June 14th, and so his name is Sebastian.
Where is he? Hi, Sebastian. We appreciate you being here. Sorry you have to live with Representative Tilbury. We're sorry about that. But thank you for being here. Representative Downey.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I'm going to speak on behalf of the bill, and I actually am somewhat in agreement with my colleagues, Representative Broad and Representative Coles, in terms of maybe the mechanism for trying to do this. But I want to bring up that in terms of getting some white smoke out of the Capitol this year, in terms of trying to address the overriding business climate, we held the Jobs Task Force, and there were a number of other bills traveling that were all about government spending money to try and incentivize job creation and looking to state expenditures to be the engine for economic renewal and growth. And frankly, the Small Business Caucus that came together, a bipartisan group, I think really saw the facts presented to them, heard from businesses for some of them who aren't from a business background, maybe hearing for the first time in very tangible ways the challenges that business faces. And I'd suggest that it's some of the momentum, kind of that groundwork that was done in the Small Business Caucus that led to that receptivity in the Capitol this year to try and do something. And I would fully admit that what we've done is just a very small step. It's a signal to the legislature that we're thinking about it, and the presence of the Small Business Caucus was a big part of that. So, could the Small Business Caucus have talked to the Carlson School and maybe done this independently? I think we probably could have. I think the intention was that there would be an appropriation and that the legislature would actually commission this, and I think there's some extra merit to that. There's an extra credential that comes through that process. So I'm going to support the bill, knowing that there probably are other mechanisms, and if the bill goes down somewhere along the line, then the Small Business Caucus, I think, should take this up on their own and find a way to get it done irrespective of it. This kind of tangible, concrete data coming back to the legislature will open a lot of eyes. It's one thing to talk theoretically or to look at the comparative chart that DEED puts out from one state to the next, and it's another to actually see how it impacts individual businesses, and to see that very concretely and poignantly would be helpful for us as a legislature, and I think it would contribute to even greater momentum towards improving the business climate in Minnesota. So I'm going to vote in support of the bill.
Okay, Representative Norton, does DEED support your bill?
Madam Chair, they've been at all the committee hearings and they've not spoken against it, so I'm counting that as a yes.
Okay, Representative Dietrich, do you have thoughts on DEED and this bill? If they're in favor of this bill. The reason I ask is that, I know the Small Business Caucus, which I am not a member of. Well, I think I signed up
you
to
are
be
a
in
member.
Them. I am, but I hadn't been able to go to them. I actually read a number of the minutes that Ms. Carlson Walrath wrote, and it appears that you had a lot, DEED in the room, a lot of meetings and lots of business folks meeting with you, and I'm just wondering what DEED thinks of the bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and we have not heard from DEED on this formally, and so I would expect the same as Representative Norton. They have known about the platform, they've known about the bills that we support, and I would suggest they would have said something if they did not support it. But I just need to make one comment here, and that is it's in response to what Representative Broad said, is that we know exactly what we need to do to make small business flourish in this state. Well, I would beg to differ. And the only reason that we can all say intuitively, or what we have heard from this business here or that business here, we might be able to draw some conclusions, but I don't want to say that I think that they're highly accurate at this point. Because when we surveyed 1,080 small businesses throughout the state, who most of those businesses did not have any association to a chamber, they could not pinpoint for us where we are over-regulatory. They could not pinpoint where we are overburdensome. And so, once again, as Representative Downey said, whether that's real or not, we are there, we want to help, but we need to know exactly what we can do to help. So we, at the end of the many of the hearings, we were kind of sitting there saying, okay, they want our help. They want to make starting a business in Minnesota simpler. They want to make it faster. They want to make it less expensive. But we don't know exactly where those issues lie. And so that is the reason for the bill. And then in response to the deed question, there were people within the business community who said that this study absolutely has to be outside of the legislative arena, that you have to have nonpartisan, non-biased people looking at two businesses of the like industry, like size, two different states, if we want to get to the real information as to how do we make Minnesota a more competitive place to do business.
Okay. I'm going to go ahead and move the amendment that I asked Mr. Michael to draft for me right now that's in front of you, and ask Mr. Michael to read it for the record. I'll tell you what I'm trying to do here, Representative Norton. I think either the taxes have to come out, or we can't, or we have to have all the tax items. And I think rather than trying to sort of be more loaded on one side or the other, on the left or the right here, I asked Mr. Michael to try to write the most neutral language politically possible to get kind of the bigger, you know, perspective here from a tax perspective. Because I do think, I'll agree with Representative Loon and Representative Davids that if we're going to look at the comparing the states, to take taxes out, I think, is a mistake. So I'm glad you have it in here. I just think this committee knows it's a bigger issue than just what are the local property tax rates or the income tax. So this is Mr. Michael's attempt to do sort of a neutral thing for both sides of the aisle here, and I'll ask Mr. Michael to read it, and then we can just see how the committee, if the committee wants to put it on or not. Mr. Michael.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, actually after rereading this, I have a possible suggestion for a change, but anyway, the way it was.
Sure, whatever.
Page 1, line 16, after taxes, insert, comma, including special tax provisions that directly or indirectly affect the business's operations. The suggestion that I would have you may want to consider to add is this study really focuses on the difficulty of starting a business, as I read it. And so, in fact, it may make sense to insert between businesses and operations the words businesses, to insert ability to start. So it would read, the business's ability to start operations, if we want to make this consistent with the focus of what the study is about, as opposed to a sort of a more general, well, is the tax burden in Minnesota higher than in Wisconsin, and so how does that affect starting operations? Because I take the import of the study to be how difficult is it to actually start up operations for a business in either of the two states.
Okay, so, and I'll add that, incorporate it to my amendment. But members, look at the title of the enacting clause for Representative Norton's bill here. Because it's just about small business startups, right? I mean, that's the intent of the Small Business Caucus. So it's not about everybody under the sun so we can take 3M and everybody out, right? Because this is just small business startups. I think that's a good addition. Representative Norton, what do you think of the amendment?
I'd be very happy to accept that, Madam.
Okay, discussion of the amendment. Representative Anderson?
Madam Chair, I just kind of have a pet peeve with the term indirectly. I think it's just really hard to nail down, and if we're really going to be on a fact-finding mission, I just think that that is a difficult thing to prove.
So, okay, so I guess the alternative would be to just tax provisions that affect and then take out directly and indirectly, leaving both out. Does that make sense to members? I'm fine with that if we remove both of those. So, Mr. Michael, do you want to read it again and taking out directly or indirectly and adding your new language, and we'll just start over? We'll get it on the tape.
All right. Madam Chair, the amendment would read page 1, line 16, after taxes, insert, comma, including special tax provisions that affect the business's ability to start operations.
Representative Norton, does that sound all right? Okay. Discussion. All those in favor of the oral amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay. Motion carries.
Anyone else wants to speak on the bill for or against? We're voting this out, members. That's the intent. We dragged it out of finance. It's just a study. It's really not something for the tax committee, and I think Representative Norton, I surprised her when I told her I thought we should see it, and I think now she sees why we would want to see it, so we appreciate that. So Representative Liebling renews her motion that House File 2849, as amended, be passed and sent to the General Register. Discussion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, say nay. Motion carries. Thank you. The bill is passed and you're on your way. And we're going to come back tonight, members. We don't know when. Does anyone have any input on that? Representative Solberg? Does anyone know how long the floor goes? Anyone in here?
Not that long, I heard.
Well, stay tuned and we'll try to make announcements. We have Representative Murphy's bill and Representative Hornstein's bill. And these are both revenue-raising bills.
Madam Chair?
Representative Marquardt?
We also have the property tax division report that shouldn't take too long.
Oh, that too.
There are some bills in that, and that was supposed to start at 1, but we're thinking
okay.
of going at the chair's call now. So we probably
okay.
should get that in today, too.
Everybody should stay tuned, then, and we'll try to work it out. Representative Brett?
Madam Chair, I just had a procedural question. None of the bills that we're going to be dealing with tonight are bills that will be leaving the committee. They'll be laid over for possible inclusion. Is that correct?
You know, they may be voted out. I should be clear on that. What we're really trying to do here today is try to work with the Health and Human Services Committee, and Representative Murphy is attempting to carry the revenue piece for that bill. And so we're on a timeline to get that bill through. But we want to discuss both of these bills, and we're not exactly sure what we're going to do here. But I think it's likely one or both could be, get voted, one or both, or neither could be voted on tonight. So I'll talk to Representative Broad as soon as I know, and we'll get the word out. Okay, so thank you. We're adjourned. Appreciate it.
You're in recess.
I forgot about Representative Wofford. Oh, we're in recess. Sorry about that. We are in recess. We're going to call the tax committee to order, and thank you, everybody. I hope people had a chance to get some dinner between all the committees that are going on. Representative Murphy moves House File 3809, and members, we're hoping to vote on this. So it's, I believe, I'm just going to ask, the motion, is it, where is the motion to? We're sending it to Ways and Means. I'm asking Representative Carlson. Do you happen to know if this bill is Ways and Means or to the floor or to health?
Let me look at it.
Okay, this is the revenue on the health bill. I think it's Ways and Means.
Well, I would have to go to Ways and Means.
Okay, so Representative Murphy's motion is House File 3809 to pass and be sent to Ways and Means. Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. House File 3809 raises the surcharge on HMOs. The current surcharge is 0.6%, and this bill raises the surcharge to 2.5%. It's applied to the total premiums collected by HMOs and county-based purchasers. The funds raised from the surcharge are matched federally, $1 to $1. The health plans and county-based purchasers are repaid in the form of an MA rate increase or medical assistance rate increase. That repayment is 2.5%. The repayment is based on the business that the HMOs and county-based purchasers do in medical assistance and Minnesota care, and because the different county-based purchasers and health plans do different amounts of public program business, the repayment is uneven and distributed unevenly because it's based on the rate of business that they do. The federal funds we bring into Minnesota are used to offset the cuts in the Health and Human Services bill, and that's a debate for Health and Human Services and for all of us on the floor. This surcharge raises $58.9 million in 2011 and $84.1 million in 12 and 13. I'm happy to answer your questions, and I would like your support. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Representative Murphy. Is there anyone who would like to testify for or against this bill? Please join us if you want to testify for or against this bill. Sure. Yeah, the pages, I think they're passing out something else, but when they're done, they can pass out your information. Maybe just set it right there on that cart, and then Dave and Charlie will get it when they're done with this one. They're still passing out Representative Murphy's items. Okay, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Phil Griffin. I am appearing today on behalf of the Minnesota Council of Health Plans and my client, Preferred One, which is a member of the Council of Health Plans. I'm appearing before you this evening in opposition to the passage of House File 3809. As Representative Murphy described, this bill raises money for the MA surcharges, but the bill raises more money than the health plans receive back in additional medical assistance fees. That, Madam Chair and members of the committee, is what I would call a tax. This increase in taxes will not only increase the tax on the plans, but will increase the cost of health care coverage to individuals who purchase coverage in our commercial market. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, the chart that's being handed out to you, there are two of them. The first one talks about the health plan taxes. It's entitled Minnesota Health Care Taxes by Health Plan Product. And as you can see from that chart, taxes and assessments now make up almost 7% of the premium for small employers and 7% plus of small employers who are in the self-employed and individual market. Large employers, including the state of Minnesota, yourselves, are exempt from this type of tax. As drafted, this bill will fall only on those small groups and individuals. This will have unintended consequences for the increasing trend of small groups and individuals who are dropping their coverage. Many of you saw the report from the Minnesota Department of Health released in February of this year, which showed that from 2007 to 2009, there's an accelerating trend of small groups and individuals dropping their coverage because of unaffordability. We've gone now from a market in which 62.5% of our Minnesota employers had coverage to now having only 57%. This tax also falls in an unequal way upon plans based on their book of business and their licensure. And that takes me to the second chart, where Minnesotans get their health insurance, the circular chart. And if you look in that upper right-hand corner, the fully insured, formerly HMO, indemnity and Blue Cross and Blue Shield market is where all of the tax falls. The rest of those groups are exempt from this tax. Madam Chair and members of the committee, this means that people are going to make decisions based on whether the tax falls on them or not. And in these days, when we're marketing a health plan, a difference of 1 point or 2 points is enough to move a group from one type of insurance to another. And that means that people who are making decisions on whether or not they should maintain their coverage under the regulated market, in which we try and pass bills and have regulations on a variety of things, are making decisions to move out of that market and into the self-insured market, which you no longer regulate here in the state of Minnesota under state law. This tax will place my client, Preferred One, and other plans below the statutory requirements of insurers required to meet their risk-based capital requirements to maintain solvency. The legislature and this administration continue to cry for competition in this market, but in one bill, you will eliminate not only the one new plan that's been brought into the Minnesota market in HMOs in the last 15 years, you will also put others at jeopardy in the not-too-far-distant future. Preferred One Community Health Plan has only 50,000 enrollees in the insured market. This was a PPO that began 25 years ago, but this is the second time in the last 17 years that the Minnesota House will have passed a bill to put this company out of business. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, Madam Chair, excuse me, I feel very strongly about this bill, and so does my client. I can't tell you how strongly we feel about it. The business community is behind me, and they will testify if you so desire that they are in opposition to this bill as well. We do not believe this is a small technical bill. We do not believe that the amount of money being raised in this is being distributed in an equitable fashion. We would urge you to oppose the bill. Madam Chair, if there are other questions, I would be happy to answer them.
Thank you for your testimony. Are there others who would like to speak for or against this bill? Representative Garners, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Griffin, nice to see you. My understanding of the bill is that some or those HMOs who serve PPOs that serve fewer MA patients would get less. Those that serve more MA patients would get more. Is there a reason, or I'm assuming that's true, and the Preferred One treats fewer MA patients as a percentage of its clients, and I'm curious why that is.
Sure. Madam Chair and Representative Gardner, you're absolutely correct in your analysis. The goal of the legislation, I think, is admirable. Preferred One entered into the market late. We were the last one to come into the market, and it was impossible for us to get a health plan started for a number of years in competing with the big three in this marketplace. As a part of moving into that marketplace, we were not able to get started with a plan that included a Medicaid component because providers were unwilling to contract with us. I was at the plan at that time as a full-time employee and engaged in getting the license for the company. When we finally got started, it was at the same time that the state decided that it wanted to move into managed care for the prepaid medical assistance program. As a part of that arrangement, we made a joint venture with UCare Minnesota to provide our network to them statewide so that the state would be able to qualify under our 1115 waiver to have a choice of health plans, which is required under that waiver in order to go into prepaid medical assistance. So through that joint venture, we have invested considerable time and money, but we don't receive any premium for that joint venture. And so that's why we aren't receiving any of the money on the medical assistance surcharge payback that is under this bill. I hope that is
Madam Chair,
understandable. It's a very convoluted answer.
I'm on Representative Cheeson's committee, so I sort of cut half of that. okay. At some other time, perhaps we can chat about Preferred One, but and how that sets up. But that's helpful. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative.
It certainly wasn't for any lack of knowledge on your part, but just
okay.
Madam Chair, members, if there aren't any further questions, I appreciate your time.
Well, we want to get let's get the public testimony all done. Was there a question for Mr. Griffin from anyone? Representative Laffer, I guess.
Madam Chair, just a very brief question for the record, and that is to Mr. Griffin, does the HMO Council support increasing the number of people who are covered under prepaid medical assistance programs operated by the state?
Madam Chair, Representative Loeffler, I don't know that I have a definitive answer to that question or if it's ever been answered in that way. I think I can't speak for the plans. I can speak for individually Preferred One. The difficulty in trying to increase the number of patients under medical assistance and working with them is that the amount of money that we are given by the state under prepaid plans, and this is a decision that I know Preferred One has considered very carefully, makes it impossible for us to go out and contract with providers when we bring them those rates. They are not interested in taking on those kinds of individuals at those kinds of rates. And so in order to be competitive in this marketplace, we've made a decision that that is something that we can't do. And it continues to be a very dramatic shift, and I know I'm in the purview of the Health and Human Services
Committee. Yeah, members, we do want to stay on the reason the bill is here, but Mr. Griffin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. But I think, you know, the differentiation between when I was testifying and Representative Winnie's committee 20 years ago has only exacerbated the differentiation between commercial and public program rates, and it's something that is going to come home to roost and already is.
Okay. Representative Downey.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Griffin, I came in late, and as I was sitting down, you started making some comments about, I think, the future viability of Preferred One under the provisions of this bill based on its impact on reserves. Could you explain whether I heard you properly or what the real impact is?
Just very quickly, the state requires currently under the risk-based capital requirements for the Department of Commerce to run a health maintenance organization in the state that you maintain a risk-based capital level of 200%. If this surcharge is put into place, Preferred One will immediately be below that surcharge. We've asked for language to be inserted into the Omnibus Health and Human Services bill that would exempt us should we be knocked below that. That language is in the bill currently. I've been told by the Department of Human Services that that language runs counter to what the Code of Federal Regulations requires for the MA surcharge, and I'm told there's an amendment prepared that will be offered sometime after 9 o'clock this evening to take that provision out, in which case we would be back where we started from.
Representative Murphy, you want to put your intention on the record so we can...
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Accurate?
Members, we have been working with the health plans for months now on this issue, and we understand the two issues, the one that Mr. Griffin is talking about, and then the second about the issue of the distribution based on the amount of public business that's done by each of the health plans. And we have been working with the Department of Human Services to try and make that more even, and it is our intention to continue to do that work. and we are working with the Department of Human Services federal staff as they're working with CMS to make sure that we're not breaking any federal rules. But it's our intention to make it as fair and even as possible, given the limitations of our abilities under the rules of surcharges set by the federal government.
Okay. Other public testimony? Oh, Representative Downey.
Thank you. Just a quick follow-up. Mr. Griffin, what's the implication if the combination of amendments and unamendments that we just heard described actually puts you below that reserve threshold?
Mr. Chairman, excuse me, Madam Chair, I apologize. Representative Downey, if you are below risk-based capital, then the Department of Commerce is required by state law to step in and take a government action, which is basically putting the plan in receivership.
Representative Downey.
And Madam Chair, I appreciate good intentions, but one of the things that I've learned here is that you only get a chance to vote on what's in the bill and what's in the amendment before you. So anyway, I would just urge some caution here in spite of good intentions. If we literally put a health plan out of business by virtue of this, I mean, that would be a huge mistake from my perspective.
Thank you. Rep. Sam Davids.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just reading through the bill here, basically on page 1, lines 1.17, we talk about a surcharge. And I'm assuming the reason, just to verify that this is before tax committee, is because that is an effective tax. Would that be the definition? Well, or is this the surcharge committee?
Well, you know, Representative Davids, I'm glad you asked that, because I'll tell you, a lot of people have asserted that, really, honestly, more on my side of the aisle, that because past practice has been that these surcharges actually did not go through taxes, that it shouldn't go through taxes. But, you know, when Representative Krenke and Senator Pogemiller passed the law that a tax is a fee, and that is still in law, a lot of people think that was repealed, but it was not. When the House Democrats took the majority 4 years ago, we had a lot of debate on how we were going to handle all these fee bills and charge bills and whatever. And so the House rules actually say that, you know, the House has that purview, the House Tax Committee has the purview to decide on that. And the first couple of years, we really kind of made every fee come through here. And I think the committee collectively kind of figured out quickly that that made almost every bill in the whole legislature come through taxes and really bogged everything down. And so we've been more, you know, these smaller fees, really, we have not had them come here. But, you know, this kind of number, in my estimation, you know, at being, let's see, the dollar amounts raised, 58.9 and 84.1, you know, I thought it should make a stop here. I also thought, you know, it would assist with the situation where folks on the floor would have said it was never seen in taxes, and so we could get it done here. But I do think we should, you know, members should know this, that in 2003, at that time, House Chair, Health Policy or Health Finance Chair Bradley raised this exact same MA surcharge, and the bill never did come through taxes, and it was passed by the majority and supported by the governor. It never came through taxes. I mean, 2003 is only 7 years ago, but it seems like 100 years ago, so I felt better safe than sorry, even though there's a lot of precedent to show something like this didn't need to come to taxes, and in fact, the now minority have passed, you know, have voted to raise it in the past, and the governor signed it, and Chair Bradley had passed it. So, you know, I was trying to make the right call for the process, and you could argue it should never have come here. Representative Davids.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. I wasn't arguing that at all. I think it does belong here, because to me it does look like a tax. Now, where, just for the record, the next stop, if this passes out of committee tonight, would be where? Does it go to Ways and Means?
Ways and Means, yes.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Marquardt.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. I'm trying to understand this. This first question is for Representative Murphy. The surcharge increase equates into rate increases for these HMOs. And is it pretty much revenue neutral? What they pay comes back in rate increases for the HMOs in total?
Madam Chair and Representative Marquardt, we will charge a 2.5% surcharge on net or the total premiums paid by the HMOs and market-based purchasers. And we will return a 2.5% rate increase on MA and Minnesota Care Business. So there is an uneven distribution or repayment because some of the health plans do less public business than others. So the health plans that do more Minnesota Care and medical assistance will see more of an MA rate increase, thus more of a repayment.
So if my understanding, Mr. Griffin, I heard you say that you considered this a tax increase because you were going to pay more in than what you were going to receive. So then could I say some of the HMOs will see a tax decrease because they will be paying in less than they will be receiving? If kind of what you said. I mean, am I understanding this correct? Some will pay more than they receive and some will pay less. So some will actually see a decrease in the amount that they'll come out as net winners and there's some net losers.
Madam
Chair, is that
Representative
correct?
Markward,
Mr. Griffin,
I do not agree with that analysis. I believe that this will raise more money than will come back in the medical assistance surcharge in the amounts of tens of billions of dollars. And that money, while there is money coming back to the plans that will give plans winners and losers, any plan with commercial business will actually be paying in more money than they get out. This is a tax increase that is being used to fund other parts of the Omnibus Health and Human Services bill, mainly the new early adoption of medical assistance under the new federal legislation. So while there is a 2.5% tax on my commercial business at Preferred One, and that is true of the other plans as well, 2.5% of our total business is a great deal more than 2.5% of the medical assistance budget that's coming back.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Representative Murphy.
To your question, there are health plans that see a net increase under this proposal and some that see a net decrease in terms of the repayment. So, yes, just like when we talked about the HMO surcharge and the hospital surcharge in MA in the GAMC bill, and you will recall that there was this question of repayment and the uneven nature of the repayment. But I want to go back to a point that Representative Loeffler made. Well, first I want to correct something that Mr. Griffin said. My intention is to use this revenue in the Health and Human Services bill to offset some of the cuts that are being made. And some of us have spent a lot of today in the Health and Human Services Committee, and we've listened to more than 60 people testify about the cuts that are being made in that bill. That's for the Health and Human Services Committee, not for here. But that's the intention of this proposal, is to offset cuts. We do know that if we are fortunate enough to do an early adoption of medical assistance, that the health plans in Minnesota and the county-based purchasers will see an increase in enrollees in their public programs, and we know that the public programs in Minnesota are doing well financially. And so while I understand that there is a maldistribution or an uneven repayment of this legislation, we also, at the same time, will likely see an influx of new enrollees and new business in the public programs, medical assistance, and Minnesota Care, if the Health and Human Services bill is passed.
Okay. Further public testimony. Is there anybody else who'd like to speak to us on this bill, for or against? If not, we're going to go to amendments. And
thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Davids, you have an amendment? I think it's in members' packets. No, I don't know. Oh, I have one.
Passed out.
Oh, it's passed out. Representative Davids. And you know, Representative Davids, I don't think we moved the bill, did we? I don't think we had a quorum. We did?
Yep.
Okay, we moved it. But we had moved the bill, the Murphy bill?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Representative Davids.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And if the whoever does the numbering page line, all that, could take care of that for us, that'd be appreciated so that it fits into House File 3809. What we're doing here, and I want to be right up front, this was something that came to me just a little bit ago. I have not talked to the author of the bill on this. I have not talked to, I don't think, any other members on this. So this is kind of maybe a bit of a surprise, but what my amendment would do, I'm calling it the David 6% solution. What it does is it caps the amount that any HMO can make at 6%. Now, that is against every grain of anything I have in my rather large body to cap anything as far as what companies can or cannot make. But it's only on the portion of business that has to do with the Medicaid and the government portion of their business. So that's the only reason that I would consider carrying something like this. And what it says is that, very simply, it's a very simple amendment. It's a very simple solution. And my concern about the current bill that my friend Representative Murphy has is this is clearly a tax increase, and we know what happens to tax increases around this place. I'd like to cut to the chase, have a solution here that actually gets it done, a solution that could be signed by the governor. I have not talked to the governor's office on this to see yay or nay on your bill or this amendment. What it does is it caps at 6% the profit. Half the HMOs involved in this business make more than that, half make less than that. So this would cap it at 6. On their commercial business, these HMOs are making, from what I understand, an average of about 2%. So for half of them, this is quite a cash cow for them. Point number two is it freezes administrative costs at the 2009 level, so we're not cutting them back there. And what it would, in effect, do, it would take the savings from the 6% to somewhere up to 12% and would put it over, put GMC people on Medicaid. No tax increases, no new revenues. We're reallocating existing funds. And, you know, some are making 12% now. If we cut them down to 6, we have a 6% spread there that we can use. No tax increase, as I said. No new revenue. It's actuarially sound. The plans should have a sound actuarial studies as they come through. Currently, these plans are actually commingling funds between their government business and their private commercial business, and it's very, very hard to track what happens here. You can see from the chart I passed out the monies that are being spent, and then the white line going across is what the providers have been receiving. So I give this amendment, I present this amendment, and again, I apologize. I just got this about, I suppose, a quarter to 8. I have not talked to the office, so I don't like blindsiding folks here, but I would just put this amendment up for debate.
Okay, so Representative Davids moves a TP-A15 amendment with the staff directed to make the necessary changes to make it conform with the bill. Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. This is an issue that I had heard about yesterday from another member who serves on the Health Policy Committee, and I understand this amendment is going to be before the Health and Human Services Finance Committee later this evening. And I think that's probably a better place to deal with it because it really is dealing with the health plans and more of the jurisdiction of Health and Human Services. As you've described it, Representative Davids, there's another member who's also been working on this issue. She has described it in the same way. And I would like to know from the Department of Human Services if what this nets. I don't know what that is. And so at this point, I think it probably doesn't belong in the tax bill that I'm carrying, in the MA surcharge bill that I'm carrying. But I do think that it is worth exploring. And if you would be willing to withdraw this tonight and work with me on it, it may be a way for us to address some of the issues that I'm trying to address, and for that I'd be grateful.
Representative Davids.
Well, I would disagree with my good friend Representative Murphy on one point. I think it does belong here because this is tax committee, and this, the Davids 6% solution gets rid of a tax, so I think it's very appropriate to be here. That's on the one hand. On the other hand, this is new, and I think it would only be fair for Representative Murphy and I to be able to visit about this a little further. There is another stop. So that's why I asked Madam Chair where the next stop was. It is Ways and Means, which I have the privilege of serving on that committee also. So, Madam Chair, at this point, I will withdraw the TP-A15 amendment.
Okay, Representative Davids withdraws his amendment. Other amendments? Other discussion? If not, we're going to take a vote, and we're going to send this bill to Ways and Means.
Madam Chair, roll call, please.
Representative Broad requests a roll call. Representative Garofalo, please.
Madam Chair, just a question for the Chairman of the Ways and Means Committee. Where would this money be carried? Under what target under your budget resolution?
Representative Solberg.
Madam Chair, Representative Garofalo. I think that this would probably be in the Health and Human Services target right now. I can't tell you that because I think as we look at this and keep in mind I'm kind of punting here.
That's cool.
But I think I'm correct. that would be carried within that target. Okay. And so that would mean that there would be, since it's health and human services related, okay, less cuts to health and human services.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Chairman Solberg.
Thank you. Okay, so on the roll call, Rep. Coles.
Madam Chair, Representative Murphy, and I was a couple minutes late coming down. I wasn't sure when we were starting, and so I apologize if you already talked about this, but and I don't know, maybe somebody from the department wants to weigh in, but do we have any indication, is this something that the administration is open to, or is this a veto as soon as it hits the governor's desk? I mean, is this, are we chasing our tails here, or, I mean, what, if this gets to the governor, do we know what's going to happen? Have you had conversations with the administration?
Representative Murphy.
Madam Chair and Representative Coles, I have not talked with the administration about this piece of legislation. I know that the administration has this year told us that they were not going to support surcharges. I also know that MA surcharges in the past have been an acceptable form of revenue for this administration. I think that means it's an open question, and I am not seeking a veto, but I am seeking to engage in that discussion.
And Madam Chair, Representative Murphy, thank you. And I heard the, I don't recall specifically what did or didn't happen in 2003. I don't doubt at all that that this was part of what we did in 2003. But I guess I would encourage you to have those conversations now, because I'll continue to have those questions as we move forward. I look forward to further discussion around this, Representative Murphy.
Thank you,
Representative Davids.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I look forward to working with Representative Murphy on this issue, because I really believe that as you look at this, this may be the solution that actually works. And as you go through the committee, just remember the David 6% solution, or it could be the David's Murphy 3% solution.
But 4 and 2.
Either way, or 4 and 2, whichever.
I'm shorter.
Representative Broad. Madam Chair, and you know, we're talking a little bit about what happened in 2003, and I think it's important to put on the table the differences between what was actually occurring in 2003 and what this actually will do, because while there's similar mechanisms, the approach, in my understanding, and maybe Representative Murphy, you might be able to enlighten us all, I think it would be helpful, was that surcharge was a specific surcharge related to nursing homes, and this surcharge is a specific surcharge related to HMOs. Is that a fair characterization of your understanding of the difference? So the mechanism is the same, but the where the charges actually will fall is different. Is that fair?
Representative Murphy.
Madam Chair and Representative Broad, in 2003, there was a medical assistance surcharge on nursing homes. It was increased by 173%. We collect that surcharge today. It goes into the general fund. And this is a MA surcharge, another mechanism allowed by the federal government. We're raising it 1.6%, and it would go into health and human services.
And members, I think the discussion of 2003 came up in light of kind of why is it here. Okay, so to recall on that, I think that's right, it was MA surcharge for Representative Murphy's doing HMO, the governor did, and the now minority did the nursing home. It was called the granny tax for folks who were on the tax committee back then, as you will recall, in 2003, and not in the tax committee, in the legislature. And again, that never came to taxes. And it was then included in the large omnibus health bill, and that never came to taxes either. But the reason we were discussing the 2003 issue, really, in my estimation, was sort of why did I want to have it heard here? And I would argue that, you know, when the Republicans were the majority back then, they should have heard it in taxes, but they didn't twice. They passed them, and they became law. So I'm glad we're doing it straight up and owning that it's revenue. So further questions? Okay, so if not, we're going to call for the roll call.
Anderson?
No.
Broad?
No.
Carlson?
Aye.
Davids?
No.
Dabney?
Aye.
Demmer?
No.
Dill? Dietrich?
Yes.
Downey?
No.
Eastland? Gardner?
Yes.
Garofalo?
No.
Hillstrom?
Yes.
Coonan?
Aye.
Coles?
No.
Lanning?
No.
Lesh?
Aye.
Liebling?
Yes.
Loeffler?
Yes.
Loon?
No.
Markford?
Aye.
Mullery?
Aye.
Murphy?
Aye.
Reinert?
Aye.
Rukavina? Rude?
Aye.
Solberg?
Yes.
Tilbury?
Yes.
Zellers?
No.
Lincheski?
Yes.
Dill? Eastland? Rukavina?
Okay, thank you, Ms. Bergman. There being 17 ayes and 10 nays, the bill passes and is sent to Ways and Means. Thank you, Representative Murphy.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair and members.
Thank you. Representative Hornstein. Would someone like to move Representative Hornstein's bill? Sorry. I didn't grab that.
I'll move
I will if I can get it.
No, but I'd like a roll call.
Was there a motion? I'm sorry. Representative Rude moves House File 3809.
Thank you very much, members.
Representative Rude moves House File 3044 for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill or maybe somewhere else. I don't know. Yeah. Representative Hornstein, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is a Hornstein-Davids tax reform. Madam Chair, I do very much appreciate your hearing this bill and everyone for hanging in there at this late hour.
Yeah, Representative Hornstein, before you go on, I want to apologize to you because you waited this morning and you kind of got the short end of the deal here today, so really appreciate that you've been so patient.
Madam Chair, I just appreciate that you're hearing the bill. So, members, House File 3044 is an effort to address issues related to foreign source royalties, foreign operating issues, and tax havens. There's three different issues rolled into one, and the common theme is, really to address some of the issues related to these overseas tax issues, corporate overseas tax issues, and I guess I'll just do what many non-tax members do, lay people on the tax issue do, which would be to perhaps have Mr. Michael go through some of the...
Representative Hornstein, I think the committee would back me up that it's all the tax committee members do the exact same thing. It's not just non-tax folks. Okay. It's all of us. Mr. Michael. Oh, Representative Mori.
Madam Chair, I think we should have Representative Hornstein explain it.
Mr. Michael.
Section 1 deals
with Madam Chair, members of the committee, I will not go through the whole bill in excruciating detail because this bill was passed last session by a slight variation on this bill was passed last session by the tax committee as part of the omnibus tax bill, but it basically makes three sets of changes in the corporate franchise tax. First of all, it eliminates the foreign operating company rules, which essentially allow a domestic corporation that meets certain tests of foreignness. That under the revamped version of it, you have to have 80% of your income from foreign sources under federal rules to qualify as a foreign operating corporation, and that entitles the foreign operating corporation to essentially an 80% discount on the tax that applies to them, so they can exclude or they qualify for either the dividend received deduction for what's called to be deemed dividends, and secondly, they're excluded from the unitary group. So that's the first provision, is that it essentially eliminates the foreign operating corporation rules, which means that those corporations would then be treated like any other domestic corporation, and their income and their factors would be included in the unitary group and would be taxed like any other corporation's income would be taxed. The second thing the bill does is it repeals what's called the foreign source royalty deduction, which also is an 80% deduction, and so also provides an 80% discount. And that allows the receiving corporation from royalties and like payments from either a foreign corporation, which means a corporation that's incorporated in a foreign country, or a foreign operating company that pays that income to the receiving company, it allows them to exclude 80% of that income from taxation. So that's the second part of the bill. The third part of the bill is that it provides a rule that says that corporations that are incorporated in tax havens, which is defined by reference to a list of countries, which if you look in starting on page 3, you can see the list of countries that qualify as tax havens. This list was taken from the intersection of the OECD original list of tax havens and a list that was in a congressional tax bill that was introduced by Senator Levin and then Senator Coleman, that was based on IRS source materials that were filed in a court filing. So it's countries that were on both lists. If a country was only on one list or the other list, but not on both, it's not on this on this list. The consequence of being a corporation that's either incorporated in the tax haven or that has enough activity in a tax haven that 20% or more of its income is attributable to the tax haven means that it will then be treated just like a domestic corporation and not like a foreign corporation, which that means that it will have its income and its factors included in the unitary group and tax will be paid on it the same way as if it was incorporated in the United States. So that, in essence, are the three parts of the bill.
Representative Hornstein.
Thank you. I have three brief testifiers as well.
Great, thanks.
And
I apologize to them as well.
No,
they were here this
okay.
morning.
I guess I'd like to call up first Mr. Smith.
Representative Hornstein, Ms. Carlson-Walroth was pointing out line 4.8. There's a country named Jersey in your bill. A country named Jersey.
You know, I would like at some point,
Jersey.
Madam Chair, we could play a geography game here because I was a geography corps at McAllister College, but there's two on here that I had never even heard of, too. Vanuatu. Anyone on the committee hazard a guess where that is, because then you'll get a prize.
What number?
It's the South Pacific.
Yes. Representative Gardner.
Where is it?
Gets the prize.
Where is it?
It's in the South Pacific.
Where is it in the bill or where is it in the world?
South. in the South Pacific.
Yeah.
Okay. What's the other one?
I also did not know where not. Uru.
Isn't that somewhere in Star Wars?
Representative Gardner is two for two.
Now, where is that? Representative
also in the South Pacific. Many of these, Madam Chair and members, are islands, and we'll probably get into why in a minute with our testimony. So.
Islands? In Guernsey's in the
end. Okay. Thank you. Welcome to the committee. Please.
Thank you, Madam Chair, committee members. I'm Dane Smith, President of Growth and Justice. We're a nonpartisan research organization. We're focused on economic development and tax and budget issues. In a nutshell, we think business growth and economic fairness, economic justice go hand in hand and are not contradictory goals. We think you can be pro-business and pro-government and that this has been the secret to Minnesota's competitive advantage. First, the obvious big picture on this legislation, we desperately need both short-term and long-term to restore more revenue to our budget base. And at long last, we desperately need a more balanced approach to budget balancing. All our former governors from all major parties agree there is a broad consensus on the need for more revenue. Over the last decade, Minnesota has cut its taxes and its public investments more than any other state, according to reports by the Center for Budget and Policy Priorities and Census Bureau data. The results of this strategy have been very disappointing. The proponents of tax cuts and downsizing government essentially promised unprecedented job and income growth benefiting everybody, and we have a failure to deliver that product. While we are number one among the states or near that in downsizing our public investment and our government since 2002, we have plummeted to 38th in job growth, 46th in the rate of median household income growth. Anticipating the argument that any revenue increase is bad for a state with bad business climate, I draw your attention to our own Department of Employment and Economic Development that has produced a report that finds that has published a report that finds our business tax and business costs to be a very attractive 15th lowest in the nation. Wayne Cox, Citizens for Tax Justice, had a fine editorial on that in the Star Tribune today. The point is, there's room for more revenue and still remaining competitive from and retaining our business advantage. The real main thing, and a point often voiced by mainstream economists and thinkers left, right, and in the middle, is that if we don't rebuild and reinvest in education, in our schools, invest more resources in improving our early childhood preparation, higher education attainment, if we don't continue to invest in our physical infrastructure, our health care, and a cleaner economy, we will continue to lose our luster as one of the most successful and fairest states in the nation. Three quick points in behalf of HF3044. One, many economists do agree that it's better in a budget crisis for states to raise taxes on businesses and individuals who can most afford it than to further slash the public sector safety net or lay more people off when unemployment is already crippling the economy and our families who are hardest up. It would be nice not to have to raise taxes on business. And in better times, Growth and Justice has and will support reasonable reductions in business taxes or a revenue positive or even a revenue neutral sweeping tax overhaul like the proposal advanced by the 21st Century Tax Commission. And the best approach of all would be a broad-based restoration of the personal income tax rates of more than a decade ago. But we all know that the governor is thwarting every effort to raise revenue from personal income and from broader-based sources, and one of the very few sources that the governor actually has previously approved is the ending of similar special tax breaks like this for offshore operations and tax havens. Point number two, this option not only raises a significant sum, some $300 million for our budget balancing, but it appears to have the benefit of actually closing off a legal but apparently unintended exploitation of a loophole. It apparently would only affect a few of our largest corporations and not the struggling tens of thousands of small, medium, micro businesses and homegrown mom-and-pop enterprises. Most of these small businesses can't play this tax haven game, and arguably it's not fair for them to have to compete with those who do. And finally, number three, everybody these days is demanding transparency and accountability. Businesses in general have not accounted for the hundreds of millions in tax benefits they have received in this state, least of all for these more exotic forms of tax breaks. It is probable that some of the tax cuts and breaks help create some new jobs or even net job growth in the short run in this state. And it's probable that the billions in businesses, taxes, and high-income savings did not go entirely into the unprecedented enrichment of top-income Minnesotans that has occurred over the last 20 years. But we are really not aware of any reliable or comprehensive detailed studies that show the extent of actual job creation or benefits to ordinary Minnesotans from the millions that are not being paid in revenues, and in particular in these tax havens. And we do know that these recouped revenues could avert further layoffs, further real economic pain here in Minnesota to those whose economic condition is most stressed. So thanks, and I'd be happy to ask any questions and refer them to Joel Michael.
Okay, Representative Davids.
Yes. Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and a question for Mr. Michael. First of all, it's fun to sit here at 9 o'clock at night talking about House File 3044, which we know would be vetoed by the governor. That being said, Mr. Michael, if this did become the law and if the governor did sign it, would businesses then in 49 other states be able to continue with these foreign operating corporations, and in Minnesota you wouldn't be able to?
Mr.
And then a follow-up?
Mr. Michael.
Madam Chair, Representative Davids, the foreign operating corporation construct is something that's it's not unique to Minnesota, but it's a sort of a not something that most states have, and so that element of it's not, you know, not exactly on point. There are three other states have a similar tax haven provision to this. This was modeled after the Montana law, but there are also Alaska has a variation on it, and the state of West Virginia has a you know, variation on it too that's pretty close. I'm not aware of other states that have the foreign source royalty deduction. I mean, both the foreign operating and the foreign source royalty provisions were, you know, enacted in Minnesota as sort of a response to our enactment in the early 80s of unitary as a way to sort of soften the effect of it, but it's very hard to compare exactly with other states. I think one of the things to note is that for businesses that, you know, have Minnesota as a market state, because we're so heavily weighted based on sales, the key determinant of your amount of corporate tax, and as we get more heavily weighted into sales, is largely determined by how much you sell to buyers in Minnesota. And so, you know, so long as you have nexus, you can't really avoid too much of the Minnesota corporate tax by moving facilities out of the state, because the weight for property and payroll is so low. So that's a, you know, a factor to keep in mind. Now, there is a slight negative to the fact that when you sell to another Minnesota business, that counts as a Minnesota sale, and so there's a little bit of an element of that that's involved. But it's really hard to analogize to other states that have similar provisions. There are many states, most states do not have unitary, and so, you know, it's not, these kinds of provisions are not really relevant to them. They've got sort of a more leaky system that taxes these kinds of operations potentially less than Minnesota does.
Person Davids.
Thank you, ma'am. Try to ask for a roll call.
I think we were going to lay this over for possible inclusion was the motion. So,
Could we have a roll call on that?
just kidding. Representative Broad Van Zellers.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I think Representative Davids was roll calling. You know, when the bill was introduced, it was said that we potentially might lay this over for possible inclusion or something else. And so I think he was roll calling to something else.
Okay, sorry about that. I should have been clear. We are going to lay it over tonight.
And hopefully it'll stay there and not be shifted somewhere else at some other time for a health care bill or something like that. But a couple questions, one for Mr. Michael and then one for Mr. Smith, which I owe you an apology. I identified you as being part of Minnesota 2020, and I wrongly did so. You are a part of Growth and Justice, so I apologize for putting you into that camp, although I'm sure you don't mind too much. David Spell might, but you don't. A couple questions related to business taxes. I know, you know, you said that economists on the right and the left and the middle agree on a certain aspect of where you think we need to go. But, I mean, from your perspective, business taxes, and that's what we're talking about here, business taxes, are they progressive or regressive?
Mr. Smith. Please.
Madam Chairman, Representative Broad, the tax incidence study does show that most business taxes, and there's great variation in the actual regressivity from types of business taxes, that they tend to be passed on to directly to consumers, and they are at least mildly regressive.
So,
Thank you very much. And so an increase in I think you said, $200 to $300 million, and I'm anxious to find out if we have a new note on this, because I think with the OECD, I haven't seen it, I'll have to look through, with the changes, I got it, with the changes in, with the OECD and some of the other changes related to the falling off in corporate income, I would expect the numbers to dramatically change from the numbers that we saw last year in terms of the amount of money coming in. By the way, this is a great opportunity for us to cut business taxes, because it'd be cheaper for us to cut business taxes now than when business is actually thriving. So I might argue that we should actually be going the exact opposite direction from where we're going here today. But one other question, so we agree that business taxes are regressive taxes, which means that they hit the lowest income folks the hardest. But I'm also curious if Growth and Justice and you, Mr. Smith, I mean, did you guys, the R&D credits, is that something that you think are a good idea from your perspective?
You know, we, Representative Broad, Madam Chairman, we did not, we've not really taken a position on the R&D credits. There's no real, I don't have a real explanation for why. We were never really confronted with the issue. I do want to point out, however, that although on the revenue side there may be regressivity to a certain tax, almost everything that happens on the expenditure side in the public sector has a progressive impact. It tends to help people in the middle incomes and lower incomes who depend on public investment to improve the quality of their lives. So when you balance the spending against the taxing, even if the source is regressive, you have a progressive impact.
And then my question then is for Mr. Michael. I'm curious, related to the R&D credits, you know, how do the R&D credits actually interact with the foreign royalty deductions? Because what I'm trying to get to is we just spent a lot of money, expenditure money from the state, trying to put together a package that showed businesses that Minnesota is the place where they want to be. We wanted to bring businesses and keep businesses in this state, and so I'm trying to make sure that we're not, what we giveth with one, we taketh away with the other. How does the R&D credit that we just passed interact with the foreign royalty deductions? Because my understanding is that the foreign royalty deductions actually are one of those mechanisms that keep businesses with their R&D focus here in Minnesota, and so I would hate for us to spend money ineffectively, which, you know, if we pass a foreign royalty deduction, are we essentially pulling the rug out from those $40 million that we just passed a couple weeks ago? So, Mr. Michael, can you just talk about the interaction?
Madam Chair, Representative Broad, the R&D credit essentially provides a sort of a mild tax incentive for paying employees to do what qualifies under the federal rules as research and development in Minnesota, because you get a in addition to the being allowed to expense their wages to deduct that in calculating your net income, you also get a credit for paying those wages against your tax liability. And so essentially the more of those kinds of employees that you hire in Minnesota, the lower your tax is. The business advocates for the foreign royalty deduction argue that this is a great system because, on the one hand, we have these incentives like the R&D credit and the fact that the federal and Minnesota rules allow expensing of these costs, which normally would be capitalized. So you're encouraged to do the research and create the products in the U.S. or in Minnesota. And then if we're able to sort of license those products to be sold in a foreign country, when the royalties come back, the income then also gets taxed preferentially. So the argument is, look, you've got an incentive on the one end that we're encouraging the employments here, and then when the income comes back, we also don't tax it. So it's like we tax it at a 20% rate rather than a 100% rate. So it's, I think the argument they make is that the two of them mesh together. Of course, you can turn that argument around and say, well, what's the state getting for this? If we're incenting them to do R&D here, why shouldn't we then tax the income when they earn the income on it? So, you know, it's like every argument, you've got sort of two sort of two sides, the two ways you can look at it.
Representative Broad.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Michael, I'm curious, I just am looking through this now, the revenue note. What are the big changes between the note last year in terms of the dollar amounts? Is it just because of the economy? Is it because of the OECD changes? What were the numbers before? What are they now and why?
Mr. Michael. It's probably not fair. Commissioner, Assistant Commissioner Kadoon is here.
I'm sorry.
The department's estimate, but I did whisper to Mr. Michael, you know, we were talking that it went up, actually. So, Mr. Michael, you might want to comment on that, Mr. Michael, but Ms. Kadoon, too.
Madam Chair, Representative Broad, I don't remember exactly what the estimate was last year, but it was quite a bit lower. And I think the primary explanation for it, since the bill has not materially changed, and having talked to, you know, the folks at Revenue about it, and I think Cynthia might, if Beth doesn't want to comment on it, Cynthia might want to, that basically there's been some recovery in the amount of corporate income, and so that floats up. And the major factor, like you suggested, is the overall economy and what corporate collections are, because this is like a fraction of our corporate base. And so it's largely that corporate profits are looking better now than they did last February.
Do you want to hear from Ms. Templin or Ms. Kadoon?
I can after, if we want to get through the testimony, that's fine. I can wait. Just had one more question for Mr.
Sure.
Michael before we do that.
Sure.
Mr. Michael, if we pass this bill as it sits today and we don't make any changes and we have the foreign royalty piece, we have the tax haven piece, I know a couple of the pieces are done in other states and some are not, but would this legislation, the way it looks today, be something that is fairly characterized as not found in any other state in full?
Mr. Michael, can you add to that? Isn't it true that our current law is also not found in any other state? Too?
We're very special.
Yeah. Yes.
Right.
I think it's especially the way.
That's part of the problem, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, Representative Broad, I think actually it's really the corporate tax structures in other states are sufficiently unique that it's really hard for me to think of. We do have a high rate relative to other states, particularly other unitary states, but also we have the 100% sales weighting, which is not typical. These foreign provisions, I mean, you could find other states, typically in the western United States, that probably treat foreign operations not that different than us, but you've got to look at the whole picture. The apportionment factor is a huge, huge part of this, because that's really what defines how much taxable income you have in a state. So a state like Montana, for example, which I don't think has anything comparable to our foreign royalties, our foreign operating provisions, and also has this tax havens, but has a much lower rate than Minnesota does, but also has, I believe, an equally weighted apportionment formula, which is a sort of a negative. But of course, a Montana or a Alaska are not really analogous to Minnesota, because those are, you know, natural resource states, not big manufacturing states, don't have high tech companies, etc. So it's really hard to come up with, you know, comparables.
I just have one follow-up, and then I'm done, Chair. And Mr. Smith, I appreciate you coming up. I always appreciate your thoughtful approach, even though I rarely agree with you. One thing you did mention, which was interesting to me, was that you said, well, the tax cuts were supposed to, you know, have generated all sorts of jobs and economic growth. And I would argue that the so-called stimulus money were also supposed to keep our unemployment at 8%. And so, I mean, it's pretty easy to argue that none of them did what we expected them to do on either side of it. But I do think that the economy is very different today than it was back when we continue saying that if we had high taxes, we need to go to those high personal taxes. The economy in the worldwide market is just so very different. But again, I appreciate your approach.
Okay, and I know Reps and Hornstein, you have more testifiers, so we want to get to those folks. And then while we're at, we have Reps and Zellers, Gardner, Mullery. Reps and Zellers.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And my Representative Broad covered all my questions and then some, but if I was listening to Mr. Michael correctly, I think what I heard in his explanation is that Representative Hornstein is bringing forth ideas endorsed by Montana Cowboys and Governor Sarah Palin. And I just, Madam Chair, I don't know if I can sit through this. This is some sort of plan.
I think that's why it brings everyone together.
Representative Gardner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If Mr. Smith could, I have a sort of a deeper philosophical question for Mr. Smith. I read your stuff, and I read Mr. Cox's. I'll stay away from that one. I read Mr. Cox's op-ed this morning and appreciated that much, and I agree with most of what you said. I think it's true that businesses in Minnesota do benefit from taxes. We heard about this company that wants to set up in Burnsville, the aerospace company, and then when asked why they were going to set up here, it was about workforce, and we know about infrastructure issues. We've dealt with the chamber on, you know, funding transportation and the like. But the, you know, we can't legislate altruism on the part of the business community either, even though they may know that they get benefits out of taxes, whether it's derived from them or other taxpayers. They also have to heed, particularly publicly traded corporations, once a quarter, their shareholders who are trying to squeeze every penny in dividends out. And so there's legions of tax attorneys at these companies that operate overseas that are based here, trying any way they can to figure out how to avoid as much tax liability legally as possible. So, you know, other than appealing to sort of a sense of justice.
Patriotism.
There you go.
Patriotism.
How do we avoid not doing this whack-a-mole game where we close off one loophole or haven and then they find some other way legally? I mean, we keep reading about Walmart having a legion of lawyers just managing to figure out how to avoid taxes, even though they're benefiting from taxes in the first place. How do we, as a general philosophy, help shape the atmosphere here in Minnesota to move away from that?
Mr. Smith.
Representative Gardner, Madam Chair, I'm really not sure I have a good answer to that question.
I thought if anybody would, Mr. Smith, you might.
I like the whack-a-mole imagery. It's the kind of imagery you often hear around campaign finance reform, too. The idea that you can pursue the public sector and the state government can employ its lawyers and its tax experts to look for loophole, to constantly be vigilant for loopholes, and yet our tax laws are so infinitely complicated that there's always amazing creativity brought to bear in finding them, and it's just a never-ending struggle. I'm not sure that there's a quick fix or a policy answer that gets at some final solution there.
Thank you, Representative Mullery. Oh,
okay, Representative Loon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And if we want to wait, my question is probably more for Ms. Cadoon on the revenue estimate, so whenever it would be appropriate.
I'm sorry.
I said my question probably has more to do with the revenue estimate, so okay. if you want to wait until and have...
Oh, that's fine. Ms. Templin is here, or Ms. Cadoon.
Okay. All right, well, I guess the question I had was, do we know, or is there, in calculating the revenue impact of this, I see it estimates about 200 unitary groups and 500 unitary groups using the foreign royalty subtraction. What types of businesses these are that would be impacted, and the number of jobs provided by those businesses, and sort of what kinds of businesses? Are we talking largely manufacturing? Do we have any kind of information of that nature?
Ms. Cadoon, please. Welcome.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Beth Cadoon with the Department of Revenue. I don't have the exact count in front of me, but I did talk to the research division earlier today. My understanding for the foreign royalty subtraction, most of those tend to be in the manufacturing sector. For the FOC provisions, a lot of those are in the manufacturing as well, but there's also other entities that do use the FOC, like banks and some other businesses as well. So,
okay. Representative Lynn.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Cadoon, do you have any recollection at all of, on a percentage-wise, would it be a majority of the affected companies would be manufacturing? I'm trying to get a sense of the type of
right.
of jobs for these particular businesses.
Ms. Madam Cadoon. Chair, members of the committee, my understanding, yes, the majority would be for them in the manufacturing side.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I just, you know, I'm interested in the rest of the testimony as well. But I have concerns. I'm recalling a business that I toured a few months ago at Eden Prairie that is, you know, got some real cutting edge technology. And my recollection has been a few months that they do a lot of sales overseas. And they are, you know, kind of the only one of its kind or a leader in what they do. And I think this would impact them pretty heavily. And they have highly skilled labor, really good jobs that I think could be very negatively impacted by something like this. So thank you for your information.
Thank you. Representative Hornstein, your testifiers.
Thank you. I'd like to call on Jennifer Schaubach from the Minnesota AFL-CIO.
Welcome.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Jennifer Schaubach. I am the legislative director for the Minnesota AFL-CIO, which is made up more than 1,000 affiliated unions representing over 300,000 working men and women across the state. I'm here today to testify in support of House File 3044. Recently, well, in the past few years, we've had to fight for our jobs, we've had to fight for our health care, we've had to fight for our schools, we've had to fight for our roads, our bridges, the basic infrastructure our state so desperately needs to keep our economy moving forward. Meanwhile, large corporations and wealthy individuals are using elaborate offshore tax schemes to avoid paying their fair share at the expense of the honest taxpayers of Minnesota, including our small businesses, who play by the rules. These tax avoidance schemes allow big companies and wealthy individuals to benefit from our onshore benefits of tax, like infrastructure, education, healthcare, public safety, that we fight so hard to preserve, while using the offshore world to escape their responsibilities to pay for it. Each year, major corporations and individuals avoid as much as $100 billion in federal taxes by offshoring the money they make here in the U.S. or by setting up sham headquarters in tax haven countries. According to the IRS, it is estimated that some $5 trillion in assets worldwide is held offshore in tax havens. This diversion ends up being shouldered by other companies and taxpayers. The $100 billion annual burden impacts every state. Based on the percentage of total federal tax revenues that Minnesota taxpayers contribute to the national treasury, our burden is almost $3 billion a year. If we use the numbers from AGC, Associated General Contractors, that we so desperately used during our bonding debate, the same job numbers computed equates to almost 60,000 jobs. The business community will try to use the argument that we are taxing the job creators. But after years of tax breaks to business, we have lost thousands of jobs and we continue to lose jobs. Tax cuts have not been translated into an economic boom, and the overall growth of the economy has not been translated into more or better jobs. And on top of it all, large corporations and wealthy individuals continue to find new, creative ways to avoid paying what they're supposed to be paying. The fact that American companies were allowed to report less than half of their actual U.S. profits to the IRS, while ordinary wage earners have to report every penny of their earnings, is just not fair. If revenues are not raised here in Minnesota, further cuts will continue to ripple through our economy. More teachers, nurses, and police will be laid off. Funding for crucial services will be cut off, and there will be reduced spending in the private sector. During this economic downturn, when so many working families are struggling, the public will support policies to raise revenue, strengthen public programs, and provide safeguards to those who have been hurt by the recession, especially if those revenues are already supposed to be there. They are not new. corporations and wealthy individuals are supposed to be paying their taxes. They're not. It is time to end this long-standing corporate tax abuse. Ending this abuse here in Minnesota shows that we are serious about taxation that is transparent, fair, and responsible. On behalf of the Minnesota AFL-CIO and its affiliates, we ask you to support House File 3044 and end this deceptive practice. I stand for any questions.
Thank you, and thank you for staying here tonight. I appreciate it. Questions, anyone? Representative Mallory.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Schaubuck, are you saying that the best way to increase jobs is not to fire a whole bunch of government employees?
Representative Coles, did you want to answer that? I think he was sort of rhetorical. Yes. Representative Coles.
Well, Madam Chair, and I guess I'm not sure if I have a question or just a comment, and you know, maybe the witness wants to respond to what I have to say, but I've got to be honest. Your testimony astounds me. You and I can have a very appropriate disagreement about whether our tax system is fair. But for you to testify that businesses across the state of Minnesota are not following the law, which is exactly what you said, is offensive. We can disagree about whether the system is fair. But unless you're going to come forward to this committee and show me evidence of businesses and individuals breaking the law, I can't believe that that's what I heard, and that is what I heard. And if this is the AFL-CIO's idea of a jobs bill, that's the best one I've heard in 8 years I've been here. How raising hundreds of millions of dollars on job providers is going to decrease costs for consumers or result in more jobs for your members, your union members, that's astonishing. So if I didn't hear your testimony correctly, please help me out, because we can have a disagreement about whether the system is fair. But for you to say that individuals and corporations are breaking the law and not paying what they owe, help me out.
Madam Ms. Schaubuck, please.
Representative Coles, I don't think that's what I said in my testimony. They are avoiding their taxes. I never said they were breaking the law. They use elaborate schemes, and if you go to the IRS website, they explain those schemes in detail. They are, unfortunately, legal through loopholes, as most people don't want to call them. But if I wanted to skip out on paying my taxes, I could open up an offshore tax haven and have my paycheck run through there. Is that what we want? Where's the corporate accountability? And it's not all companies and corporations in Minnesota. There are those that are playing by the rules, and I think that was what I said, the rules, not the law. So
I'll let it be at this point, Madam Chair, but okay. That was some of the most amazing testimony I've heard in the 8 years I've been here.
You wanted to respond, Representative Hornstein? Or no?
I have some thoughts. I can save those till the end.
Okay. Okay, Representative Broad.
Well, Madam Chair, and I just want to make it clear that Representative Coles, you heard it exactly right. I heard the same thing. When somebody is abiding by the law, you just said it's legal. That doesn't mean they're breaking the law. That might mean we disagree with the law or you disagree with the law, but it doesn't mean they're breaking the law. And so they're two very different things, two very different things, and the record is very clear that Representative Coles heard it right.
Lush. Okay, so, you know, and we can all go for the homework and replay the tape, but I will tell you, I think this is one area that folks get hear things as pejoratives that may or may not be intended, and there's kind of a long menu of ways to talk about these things, but, you know, I heard elaborate tax schemes, and I think that's accurate. I think the creators of these elaborate tax schemes are government, You know, somebody passed these bills in Minnesota and in other countries, I mean, in other states, so the corporations didn't come up with these elaborate tax schemes, but they are elaborate tax schemes, and there's no doubt that a good company will figure out how to avoid paying tax if it can. So I think, I didn't hear that, and I understand, you know, maybe the offense, but I was listening closely, and I didn't hear the, you know, they're breaking the law or doing anything illegal, but I understand how some of the terms are red flags for people. But I think the bigger question is, what do you do about all of this? And I think, you know, we want to hear all the testimony on this, no matter how we're all emotionally maybe feeling about it. Ms. Schaubach, did you want to?
I
see you raising your hand there.
Members of the committee, I want to clarify also that it's not a jobs bill. We're concerned about the fairness in the issue. Our members are paying taxes in the state. They work very hard and try to support their families, and this is not right.
Okay, thank you. Further testimony, and then we have Representative Downey and Lesh as well, but I think you have other testimonies.
One last short one.
Yes, please. You've been waiting all day, so we know you're here this morning, too.
Alison from the Joint Religious Legislative Coalition.
Okay, welcome.
Hi, good evening. Thank you. Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Allison Killeen. I'm with the Joint Religious Legislative Coalition. Thank you, Chair Lenchesky, for the opportunity to testify in support of House File 3044. Brian Rushi was not able to make it tonight, so I will be here to provide J.R. Alsey's testimony, representing the positions of the Minnesota Council of Churches, the Minnesota Catholic Conference, the Jewish Community Relations Council, and the Islamic Center of Minnesota. JRLC supports this bill because it so directly speaks to three tax principles: ability to pay, overall fairness, and adequacy of revenues. First, ability to pay. This bill increases revenue by dismantling offshore tax avoidance schemes and increasing compliance so that foreign earnings are taxed similarly to domestic earnings. The ability to pay is there. This is an equalization issue and an issue of fairness. Second is adequate revenue. Without this bill, the state will fall short of its obligations and inflict undue pain on too many people. Our tax cutting has taken us too far into an abrogation of public responsibility. Look at the GAMC financing collapse. Look at Representative Huntley's bill and the devastating cuts that he must propose, not for policy or reform reasons, but simply because our revenues are inadequate. Let's keep this adequacy of revenue question in context. Since 2002, census data shows that no state in the country has reduced its own sourced per capita real revenue more than Minnesota. And 29 other states are using revenue increases as part of their deficit, reductions. And our tax load on businesses is now among the bottom third among states touted on the DEED website. Finally, we seek, as a matter of justice, some overall fairness in state budget policy this year. Why not end tax avoidance schemes that are being unfairly exploited? Why not end tax avoidance schemes that work against domestic job creation? Why not dismantle these tax schemes that buy back some of the budget cuts that were unveiled in Representative Huntley's bill yesterday? Cuts that have no policy or reform rationale, but are brutally imposed because our revenues are inadequate. Taxes are good for what they do, and to restore safety net, work supports, and mental health services seems right and just to our coalition. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Killeen. We have four people on the list. Are there other testifiers? Representative Hornsey, should we go to questions?
If you have questions, or maybe there's opponents.
Okay, we have Downey, Lesh, Coles, Anderson. Representative Downey.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I was going to ask some questions to confirm some things with Mr. Michael, but I think with some of the discussion, I'll just make a few comments. Having been around the Upper Midwest from a business perspective for over a couple of decades, I know that Minnesota's reputation for being such an engine of innovative and high-tech manufacturing, in fact, the emergence of our medical device industry, some of our other high-tech manufacturers such as 3M, were often attributed to me directly to the fact that Minnesota, the Minnesota corporate tax environment allowed people to have R&D and other corporate presence here and have a significant tax break on revenues realized from foreign locations on that. And so I think people need to realize that we're potentially tinkering with something that frankly was part of the foundation of some of these really great innovative companies and some of these entire industry sectors where we are extremely strong in some ways, strangely so, given our environment and our climate and other factors that you'd think maybe we wouldn't be strong in those areas. So let's be careful with what we do in that regard. And another thing people need to realize, it just isn't that hard to move an R&D facility or manufacturing plant. And remember that this provision only applies to people who have a corporate presence here and are actually selling product in foreign locations. And so if we change that tax structure, it isn't that hard for those corporations to move corporate division or something to another state or offshore. And frankly, it isn't illegal, in spite of the testimony that I thought I heard similar to Representative Coles. So it's not illegal to move your business across the border. It's not illegal to move your business to another country and continue to sell products all over the place. So we've got to be really careful with what we're talking about here. And I'm guessing that these revenue projections are statically modeled and they are not dynamically modeled. And the number of businesses that would make very concrete decisions might be a little frightening. And relative to some of the comments from Mr. Smith and the current testifier, I happened for a different exercise to go back and take a look at government employment 3 years ago as compared to today. And today, federal government employment in Minnesota is 105.8% of what it was 3 years ago. State government employment is 103.4% of what it was 3 years ago. State education employment is 102.8% of what it was 3 years ago. Local government is 99.9% of what it was 3 years ago. And local education is 101.5% of what it was 3 years ago. So this sense, and I've made this comment on the floor before and got a little pushback from members, but I went out and verified it, this sense that we have somehow been gutting government employment, the government employment statistics just flat out don't bear that out. We continue to look at the Tax Foundation 2010 booklet that just came out a few weeks ago. We're 42nd in overall business climate in the country. 42nd. There's a small business climate ranking as well, and we're down in the 40s there out of 50 states. We have the eighth highest per capita state and local tax burden in the country. If you look at go back 25 years and play our state budget forward, if it had increased at the rate of population growth and inflation, we'd have a $10 billion smaller state budget right now. So I appreciate that we get into political arguments and unfortunately it devolves into demagoguery too often from my perspective, but just taking a look at the plain facts just doesn't support the arguments that we've heard from the testimony stand today. And boy, you want to take something like this away and see what Medtronic and 3M and General Mills and all these other companies are going to start doing. The trends are already bad enough. Members, let's not pour fuel on the fire here and mess with something that's one of the foundations of why we've been successful as a regional economy.
Thank you. Representative Lesh.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I just wanted to note from the statements about Ms. Schaubach's testimony. Ms. Schaubach, I found your statements to be some of the most profound and compelling testimony I've ever heard in this committee.
Thank you, Representative Lesh. Representative Coles and Anderson.
Yeah, thank you, Representative Lesh. Is it Ms. Colleen? Is that right? Ms. Colleen, thank you for your testimony. I guess I have a question. I heard you use the term several times, tax scheme. And, you know, you can, that's fine. I don't know if we want to call it a tax scheme or a tax preference or tax avoidance that exists for the property owned by 501c3s like churches and synagogues and mosques. I'm curious from a justice perspective, why shouldn't we apply the statewide commercial industrial property tax to property owned by 501c3s like St. Victoria Parish, where I belong, in Victoria, Minnesota? Why shouldn't we apply that 2%, I think it's 2% property tax to the property owned by your members, so that we can help fund some of the government programs that you're very concerned about?
Mm-hmm. Ms. Killeen.
Well, I don't argue to be a tax whiz, but what I can say is that we don't make any profits as churches and synagogues, so we don't really have a whole lot to pay from our profits.
Well, and Madam Chair, Ms. Killeen, there's a lot of people in Minnesota who live on fixed incomes and own property, and they pay tax on that property whether they have income or not. There's businesses in Minnesota that maybe make profit or maybe don't, and they pay tax on their property, mm-hmm. and they pay it to the state. And so, you know, if I guess I'll be interested as we move forward over the next couple weeks. I hope that the JRLC will come and talk to me and hopefully, you know, share with the committee its opinion as to whether, if we're going to be looking for additional revenue, and I question just philosophically whether we should even be going there. I think we can fund our priorities as a state if we're willing to actually set priorities without raising additional revenue. But if the discussion is going to be about additional revenue, I'd like to understand the JRLC's position as to whether we should apply the statewide property tax to property owned by your members. So I hope you'll follow up with me, and then I can share that with the committee when I get a response.
Madam Chair,
well, let me just say before we spend too much time on this at this time tonight, it would be unconstitutional for us to tax churches, okay? It's in the Minnesota Constitution, so I just want to be clear, and Mr. Michael can probably tell us exactly where, but we can't do that whether we wanted to or not. So, Ms. Killeen?
Representative Coles, I will forward your request on to our executive director.
Thank you.
Okay, Representative Anderson and Broad.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I do believe that we've amended the Constitution before, but not that I'm proposing that we do that. But I had the same question that Representative Coles had on that issue, so I'd be interested in that answer as well. But since you're defining the FOCs and the foreign royalty language as tax schemes, I was just curious if your organization also believes that education credits that we provide to individuals, if that's considered a tax scheme, or maybe the gas tax rebate that we provide to the low-income individuals, if that's considered
that.
Gone. Well, when it was here, that it was a tax scheme, and maybe if you could tell me if the mortgage interest tax deduction that we provide to homeowners, if that's considered a tax scheme. I'd just like to know where the definition is for you when you're talking about tax schemes, if all the credits that we have in the state of Minnesota, all the deductions that we provide, if those are all considered tax schemes. And if you can get back to me on that, that would be greatly appreciated. Thank you.
Ms. Killeen, would you like to respond?
Sure, Madam Chair, Representative Anderson.
Ms. Killeen, would you like to respond?
Sure, Madam Chair, Representative Anderson. That is pulled from the IRS website. I'd be happy to forward you that information.
Okay, thank you. Representative Broad.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just some constitutionality aspect. Is it constitutional to tax income that's earned in other states, other countries?
Mr. Michael, can you comment on the taxing churches first and then the second on income in other countries as it relates to the Constitution? You know, I usually keep that little blue Constitution here book in here, and I don't have it, but Mr. Michael probably can tell us about both of those constitutions. Yes, Mr. Michael, the two constitutional questions here.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, the exemption for houses of worship is in the Constitution. There is some ability for the legislature to redefine around the edges of the exemption, but that is in the Constitution. With regard to Representative Broad's question about whether the state has the ability to tax foreign source income, and the I guess the obvious answer to that is no, it doesn't. It can only tax income that's fairly apportioned to Minnesota. But, of course, the issue is what we've done is we've said we're going to allow a deduction before we do the apportionment. So it's sort of not really. I guess you could make a constitutional argument that, well, the federal government has deemed this to be foreign source income, and so therefore the state has to abide by that. The difficulty is that the federal rules use a different method of sourcing. The states use formula apportionment, whereas the federal rules look at, well, where did you and try to measure where you earned the income. And so it's sort of the intersection between those two rules that we can still, you know, for many states, not many, there were many of the unitary Western states before, back in the 80s, actually had what was called worldwide apportionment and, you know, did this for everything. Everybody's backed off of that because of pressure from the federal government. But basically, we can tax income that's fairly apportioned to Minnesota, and we don't need to subtract out what's federally determined under federal rules to be foreign source income.
Representative Broad. Okay, Representative Tilbury.
Madam Chair, I guess I've got some things I'd like to say, too. Number one, I'm kind of ashamed. I'm ashamed of how we've been treating testifiers this evening. We're asking them to solve our problem. We get angry with them, and we attack them. I'm frustrated with that. Because we may not agree with what a testifier says, if that's the way I would treat a testifier or others, with the way I've seen it tonight, it just makes me very embarrassed. Who wants to come to this committee to ever testify again? How many times I've sat in this room, listened to so many people say whatever they want to say, I've seen something totally different tonight. And that's been attacking testifiers. I can maybe understand attacking each other. But when it comes down to attacking testifiers, no matter what they believe or what they say or what they stand for, I just can't believe what I've seen. Now, maybe it's just people are tired. And maybe this is just going to be the next 3 to 4 weeks, I guess. But I hope we think about this, because I'm not real pleased with it at all.
Thank you, Representative Tilbury. Appreciate your words. I think that means a lot. Were there, if it's kind of bad timing for this now, is there anyone else who'd like to testify on this bill? But I really want to really underline, Representative Tilbury, I appreciate it. And, you know, we are all getting tired, and it is the end of session, and emotions are high, and things are still going. And this is for both sides, Al. You know, sometimes we do forget that people with messages are not, you know, the people we're really, it's the ideas we're opposing. So I'm glad you brought it up. So, Representative Broad.
Well, Madam Chair, and I think Representative Tilbury, you make a good point. But we also, I think, fairly should be able to ask questions when we have testimony that we view as flamboyant in and of itself. With words like schemes, we hear it in Health and Human Services all the time, that the governor, quote, stole the money. We shouldn't, I don't think, allow those testimonies to go without some questions from committee. That's our job. And so I think that your caution is fair, but I also don't think necessarily that that we should have to sit silent on either side of the aisle when we hear something that we necessarily don't think is fair or something that we agree with. When we hear testimony that somebody is acting illegally, I think it's fair to say, show me how. Show me how. That's not an attack. That's a question to substantiate or not substantiate testimony. And so I think the caution is fair. But again, you know, I think it's up to us to parse through the testimony that we receive, to ask the questions related to the facts that are being presented to us at the testimony table. We should do it respectfully. I agree. We should do it respectfully. But I don't think that that means that either side of the aisle should sit silent when they hear something that they don't think is something they want to leave untested on the tape. When it's untested on the tape, that means it's there, and there's no pushback, and there's no conversation that we can have. And so I appreciate your caution, but I also would expect the members of this committee not to stay silent when they hear something that they want to press.
Secretary.
I guess that's why I did not stay silent.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Hesse, you look like you'd like to join us at the table. Thank you, Ms. Killeen, for being with us tonight. Mr. Hesse and Ms. Larson.
Madam Chair and members, for the record, my name is Tom Hesse. I'm with the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. And just let me begin by talking a little bit about the foreign royalty deduction, FOCs, and tax havens, and then just maybe have some general comments in summary. First, we have opposed this legislation. We've opposed legislation similar to this for a number of years now, probably dating back since the first time we saw it, I think back in 2002. And the reason is pretty simple. The purpose, at least starting with the foreign royalty deduction, the purpose of the foreign royalty deduction going back to the late 1980s when it was proposed by Governor Perpich and passed by the legislature, was to incent companies to develop technology and intellectual property here and license it to other companies outside the U.S., thus generating some foreign royalties. And those royalties were only made possible by the hundreds of millions of dollars of investment that Minnesota companies made here to generate that intellectual property and that research. So corporations do create those high-paying jobs locally to generate those royalties from foreign corporations. We believe that changing the deductibility of foreign royalties could certainly jeopardize that domestic R&D investment in this state, which, as others have pointed out, is one reason we have been successful over the years. Switching to foreign operating corporations, the Chamber continues to believe that the foreign operating corporation statute should be maintained and is an important feature of Minnesota's tax law. Again, back in 1988 when it was created, the purpose of the foreign operating corporation was to place U.S. companies operating outside the U.S. on an equal footing with foreign corporations, and that still is important. Income earned outside the U.S. with no relationship to Minnesota just should not be taxed. We, under the current system, we still tax 20% of it. So if you eliminate the FOC structure, we believe the state will be taxing income that it should not, and we'll be right back to where we were in the late 80s when this foreign operating corporation structure was initiated. Also should just note that significant legislation was passed in 2008 changing the foreign operating corporation rules, and I think most of the issues, if not all of the issues, have been resolved by that, and repealing we think would be a significant overdoing of the situation. Third, on the definition of domestic corporation and tax havens, the bill expands the definition of domestic corporation in three ways. Incorporate if you're incorporated into it in a tax haven country, you're part of the domestic corporation defined as a domestic corporation. If you're doing business in a tax haven country, you're also defined as a domestic corporation. And I believe if you have an apportionment percentage of 20% or more, you're also classified as a domestic corporation. At least that was a feature of a previous version. There are a couple of problems with this these provisions, and I'll touch on a couple of them. Again, we're looking at whether or not Minnesota can reach and tax income that's generated outside of the state and outside of the U.S. It has an extremely low nexus threshold. It assumes that just the fact that you're doing business in a so-called tax haven would trigger a Minnesota tax liability, and we just think that that is not correct. I should note that the list of countries that are deemed tax haven is quite expansive, and last year when I testified, there were only three companies on the OECD's uncooperative tax haven list. I checked this morning, and this year there are none. So I think the OECD has found in its deliberations and its through I think what they call their fiscal fiscal affairs committee to remove the three remaining jurisdictions because all have committed to OECD standards of transparency and effective changes of exchanges of information and a timetable they set for implementation. So they, as a result, no jurisdiction is currently listed as an uncooperative tax haven by the Committee on Fiscal Affairs of the OECD. Fifth, it, I believe it still gives broad authority to the commissioner to determine, you know, what is and what is not a, a tax haven country. You know, usually we give the right to regulate international affairs to Congress, and a state revenue commissioner, you know, might be given a little bit too much power if they can decide unilaterally whether or not a foreign country is does not have certain rights, or businesses that do business there have a different tax a different tax liability or tax structure because of that fact. So in summary, I believe that the provisions of this bill do jeopardize the state's success. Companies do locate high-paying jobs here, RNGD jobs here, despite Minnesota's high corporate income tax rate, I think partly because we have a R&D credit, because we have a foreign royalty deduction, because we have a foreign operating corporation structure that mitigates that high 9.8% rate. You eliminate that for FOCs, you eliminate the foreign royalty deduction, and I think there could be some significant changes to Minnesota's employment base. I don't think you can just think about the companies that are currently using these deductions. You have to think also of the companies that are preparing to be the next Fortune 500 company in Minnesota that strive to be able to create a foreign subsidiary so they can license their technology and again expand their business operation because of the provisions in Minnesota's current tax code. There's a lot of companies out there that are that may not be ready to take advantage of these now, but will be as the economy recovers and as their technologies more fully develop. We just think it's if you want Minnesota to maintain to a place of for international commerce, you ought not pass this bill. And if you're serious about improving the climate for jobs in this state, you ought not pass this bill. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Hesse. Representative Lesh.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Hesse, I wonder if you can help me out here. I'm interested in creating jobs in Minnesota. And I'm going to start, because my house is a dump, I got to clean it up. I'm going to hire a housekeeper or a cleaning lady. And I can't do that, though, because I can't afford it. The legislature isn't paying me enough. But I think I can if I can somehow funnel my money outside of the United States and get paid back somehow without the tax liability, then I'd be able to create jobs with that. Do you have a recommendation of who I should talk to about that? Or how could a guy like me operate the same way that these corporations do? Because I want to create jobs too.
And Madam Chair, Representative Lesh, that is not allowed under Minnesota law.
Okay, well, why not? Why isn't it allowed under Minnesota law, Mr. Hesse?
Mr. Hesse.
Madam Chair and Representative Lesh, the Foreign Operating Corporation statute, for example, requires you a company that uses it to have 80% of its property and payroll, actually 80% of its active business income from foreign operations. So there's presence, there's activity going on. It's not a a way to the way you're trying to make it sound to launder money. There's operations outside the U.S., and that's what we're trying to encourage, because when you have healthy in-state corporate headquarters that do operate internationally, that's good for Minnesota, that's good for the headquarters jobs, it's good for high-paying jobs in the state. If you get rid of some of these provisions that what we're talking about here, I think there'll be a response.
Okay, well, thank you, Madam Chair, but I don't think you're following here. I'm willing to do that. I'm willing to set up a dummy corporation whereby my paycheck gets funneled to that, and I hire myself back as a consultant in Minnesota and pay myself back that way. I can operate the same way a corporation does with a law change. I'm asking you how you propose I would do that. I mean, Walmart does the same thing, for example, North Carolina. They set up a corporation to own the property and cleverly avoid tax liability to do it that way, which is legal. I understand that. I want to do it legally, so I'm asking you, I just want the same opportunities to do this to create jobs as anyone else, and I'm asking you how I can do that.
And Madam Chair, Representative Lesch, under Minnesota's current law, you cannot set up a dummy corporation and qualify as a foreign operating corporation, so I think you're out of luck.
Okay, well,
Mr. Lesch,
thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Hesse, would you support a law change that will allow me to have that same opportunity so we could do that then under Minnesota law?
Madam Chair, it's not allowed for businesses. We can't set up dummy corporations and qualify as a foreign operating corporation. You have to have, to qualify as a foreign operating corporation, you have to have 80% of the active business income of that corporation to be earned outside the U.S. And so it's not a dummy corporation. It's a corporation that has activities, whether it's manufacturing or otherwise. You cannot establish a dummy corporation under Minnesota law and qualify as a FOC.
Okay. Well, Madam Chair, I think Mr. Hesse clearly knows what I'm getting at. And, yes, there are ways to get around there with clever lawyers. I can't afford a clever lawyer to do the same thing. If you have enough revenue, you can afford a clever lawyer to do this kind of thing. I'm not that clever. I'm a simple caveman who can't understand these complicated concepts. But if it's a matter of fairness and other people want to do this and other people want the same shot to create jobs like I do because I need my house cleaned, then I think it should be a level playing field. And clearly not. And we don't have a level playing field here, which is why Representative Hornstein has this noble effort to try to make it more fair. Thank you, Representative Hornstein.
And Mr. Hesse, and, you know, I think Representative Lesch, you know, that was a nice illustration for us to see the point. And I think the point's well taken. I think your comments are as well. A lot of the kind of dummy stuff that's illegal was cleaned up and closed and the governor signed. Okay, I think the more egregious thing, and Representative Hornstein is now continuing along that. But I think Representative Lesch, you know, does a good job of sort of getting people to see why people, you know, if you could pick a perfect way to do things, this certainly would not be it. And, you know, I just want to, you know, throw out that Mr. Hesse and I have had this conversation before, Ms. Larson. It's, you know, it's interesting how times change. You know, the defense of keeping this as is, remember, this was Governor Perpich and Senator Pogemiller's legislation. And so now, boy, have times changed, because this is, you know, who is defending keeping it this way? It's certainly not the people with that sort of political philosophy who are trying to keep it versus, you know, who brought it into play in the 80s, and it's still here. But I, you know, I do want to, you know, get just ask you a little bit, Mr. Hesse. The question came up earlier from Representative Garden about the whack-a-mole thing. I think that's, you know, a good question, and I think the right answer is probably Congress. I mean, I think you were trying to tell us that, and I think that's true. But are you tracking? There's a lot of proposals in Congress to just, you know, get all the states to stop allowing this. And I think President Obama has a proposal as well. But there have been bipartisan authors in Congress in trying to close all this stuff up. How will the business community react then if it's, well, this state is doing it this way and this, when Congress ultimately stops it, if they do, you know, what's the business community response to that?
Madam Chair, by stopping it, you are referring to...
Well, there's a number of different proposals in Congress, you know, different things being ended in different ways. But, I mean, I think once the states cannot, you know, have all different methods, will the business community still, you know, because I agree with you on the legit foreign source income that's legit, but it doesn't seem that the numbers really... it's really hard to show how much of that is being counted offshore and what's being earned. They just don't line up, even with you know, meetings I've had with some of our largest corporations on, you know, why they need legitimate pieces of this law to remain in place. And I think that's true. But the parts that are not, the numbers just to me, the growth is just amazing in these tax havens. And, you know, it just boggles the mind that that could be really where all the operations are going on. I mean, can you just comment on, you know, I sort of know we're all in a tough position here because, you know, if either side gives an inch, then it's, you know, but the reality between defending this and completely getting rid of it, I mean, you know, I think it's better to try to be candid about what's really going on here instead of sort of the extreme ends here. And I'm just asking if you, you know, I know I'm putting you in a difficult position, but, you know, thoughts on what I'm trying to say here as far as, you know, tightening things up as time goes along here.
Sure. And, Madam Chair, first, we don't follow closely Congress's activities. We have enough trouble keeping up with you guys. However, having said that, you know, the federal government does have a significant corporate income tax problem to address, and it's most you know, commonly seen in the you know, the corporate income tax rate numbers that are commonly quoted either by the tax foundation, the governor's used them, that, you know, Minnesota, when you combine this, the state and federal, has, you know, the third or fourth highest rate in the industrialized world. That's mainly due to the fact that we have a 35% federal corporate income tax rate. When you combine that with Minnesota's 9.8% rate, you get up to that, you know, third or fourth highest, depending on whether or not you include the District of Columbia. So there's going to have to be some significant corporate income tax reform done at the federal level to make Minnesota and other businesses in other states competitive nationally and worldwide in the near term, I think. And part of that, maybe we can meet in the middle. We can repeal the foreign royalty deduction. We can repeal FOCs, and we can just might as well repeal the corporate income tax at the same time.
Well, you know, that's not bad. Can I just ask though? Now, you know, just understanding the concern here, if a company develops its intellectual property that creates its foreign royalty, do they have to develop it in Minnesota?
Madam Chair, I believe at least the companies that we have talked to have significant research presences here. I don't know if every part of their foreign royalty stream is due to a Minnesota development or not. I can't state that, but they have significant research presences here, and a lot of their research activity, you know, is obviously done in Minnesota.
Mr. Michael, can a company develop its intellectual property in another state and claim the exclusion here?
Madam Chair, yes. The foreign royalty deduction has nothing to do with where the intellectual property was developed. So it could be in Redmond, Washington, or it could be in Austin, Texas, or Silicon Valley or wherever, and you get the it's simply that it has to have been paid by a foreign corporation to a domestic corporation and be of the right type.
Okay, we have Representative Mullery, then Downey, then Loeffler. Representative Mullery.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just as a comment, Mr. Hestey's testimony sounds exactly like his testimony on my bill about 7 or 8 years ago, but I do have a question for Mr. Michael. I thought we closed, Ms. Cadoon said that a lot of it was banks, and I thought we closed that. What is still open for banks that we didn't, I realize we...
Do you have a bank in mind you'd like to... No, I'm just kidding.
Well, I remember one at the time that was...
Mr. Michael,
happens to have something to do with the U, but and was using it totally outrageously in my mind. But
Mr. Michael,
and it was technically legal.
Madam Chair, Representative Mullery, you're probably thinking about the case that the Minnesota Supreme Court has had since December, which was, you know, a Minnesota-based bank that put most of its real estate loans into a REIT that was an FOC. That, as Mr. Hesse has indicated, has been foreclosed by the fact that now you have to have federally defined foreign source income equal to 80% of your active income to qualify as an FOC. So a bank can no longer do that, and that bank, for example, as soon as the legislature passed the change in the law, shut down its FOC. There's nothing, though, that would prohibit a bank that has foreign operations from having an FOC that would, you know, provided it meets the foreignness test of, you know, having 80% of it act from active source, active business sources from using an FOC. So it's not based on the line of business at all. It's you know, it's based, it depends upon whether you have enough foreign indicia under the federal rules to qualify.
Representative Downey.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Hesse, you mentioned something kind of in passing about the change in threshold for Nexus. Could you just explain that and where that kind of materializes in the bill, and if, in your opinion, that would have any impact on broader Nexus issues? Are we opening a can of worms here regarding Nexus that we weren't anticipating?
Mr. Hesse.
The in Section 2 of the bill, it's not a... I think my statement was that there's a low Nexus threshold for defining what a foreign corporation or a domestic corporation is. And if you look at item number 5 on in subdivision, Section 2, Subdivision 5, the defining a domestic corporation of some an entity that is engaged in activity in a tax haven sufficient for tax haven to pose, you know, the 20% test there, or is incorporated in a tax haven state, just the fact that those, you know, 20% of your property payroll or your factors are in a tax haven nation does not necessarily mean you should have a tax liability in the state.
Representative Downey.
Maybe part two of the question, does that, in your mind, create any kind of complications for other Minnesota provisions regarding Nexus, or is this pretty isolated in terms of its impact then?
Mr. Hesse.
Madam Chair, Representative Downey, no, it's pretty much contained to this this particular piece.
Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Mr. Hesse. I understand that there's some gray areas in some of this, but the tax haven one in particular to me is intriguing in that, you know, most of these little islands, it looks like the main advantage is that you get to, you know, do some corporate retreats in a nice little island. I mean, it's hard to believe that on some of these that are so small that none of us ever saw them on a map and in geography, even a geography student like
Representative Loeffler. I think Representative Zellers is suggesting a field trip. Listening to Representative Zellers,
I would
wanna...
be delighted to do that and you know, learn my geography.
Representative Zellers is suggesting a field trip to,
you know,
look at these islands and to see what sheltering is going on.
Well, Madam Chair, I know there have been a number of trade missions recently to promote economic development in Minnesota, and I, you know, if we are doing a lot of business with these places, maybe it's going to be, you know, we'd have a unique niche here that would be different than going to where everybody's going, like China, you know, and we maybe should explore it. But it's hard, I mean, for me to believe that on these tiny little islands, there's really so much business activity going without us hearing about the challenges of, you know, shipping all those building materials over to these tiny little islands so that they can, you know, keep this economic stuff going. And I guess I would like Mr. Hesse to explain to me one more time and sort of why he feels that there's a need for us in Minnesota to continue to have this tax haven provision related to activities and these very tiny places on our global map.
Sure.
Mr. Hesse.
Madam Chair, Representative Loeffler. One, I just want to reiterate the fact that the OECD has now said there are no uncooperative tax havens on their list. So if the initial theory of the legislation was that there's all these places that are either not cooperating with other jurisdictions, sharing information about businesses or individuals that are doing business or located there, that has changed, and information is now flowing freely, so there's certainly not a need, in my view, for the tax haven portion. Having said that, at least one example that was provided by a member company that may shed some light on some of this that I can share with you is that domestic companies will often set up foreign holding companies in some of the jurisdictions listed as so-called tax havens because their laws provide investment flexibility, for example. Having a foreign holding company allows our domestic multinationals to make investments worldwide and strengthen their balance sheets. And because foreign earnings are not repatriated to the U.S. by the foreign holding company, the U.S. multinationals can then compete on a level playing field with non-U.S. multinationals that don't incur a tax on the receipt of dividends, similar revenue streams.
Madam Chair, just to follow up, just because they're now being more transparent and sharing more information that might tell us they're complying with those more flexible provisions in these countries does not, to me, negate the need for saying we should audit what they're doing with this new, more available information to make sure that they really are appropriately allocating earnings to the right place on the globe, including Minnesota. And so the transparency issue to me isn't convincing that they're not tax havens. It just means now we have a better way to do audit trails to see whether they're playing fair.
Thank you. Ms. Larson, another testifier. It's past 10 o'clock. This committee is really champs here that they're still going here on tax havens. But Ms. Larson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll be brief. It's 10:10. Jill Larson with the Minnesota Business Partnership. Just a couple of sort of closing comments because a lot of the details have already been talked about. The bottom line is that companies are going to do their R&D where they're most globally competitive. That's the truth. And if we repeal the foreign royalty deduction, it really makes Minnesota a lot less competitive. We can talk about all the details, but our members can move their R&D operations pretty much anywhere they want. They can move them overseas. They're courted every day to move them overseas. And as Tom mentioned, if we got a 9.8% rate, we take away this foreign royalty deduction. We really, I think, in the long term, risk a lot of R&D investment, a lot of high-paying R&D jobs for some short-term gain. And not only does it affect the larger companies, but a smaller startup company that may eventually, license their technology overseas may also want to use this foreign royalty deduction so they can grow more jobs here. And even for the larger companies that this affects, it has a ripple effect. These larger companies produce a lot of business for a lot of suppliers and vendors that are the smaller, mid-sized companies that everybody's been talking about this session that we want to create jobs. So there's negative ripple effects, that not just on the larger companies that get this deduction, but on all the people that do business with them. So I think we need to keep that in mind. And lastly, on the tax haven issue, I think we're lumping together this definition of tax scheme with foreign royalty deduction, tax havens. If we're going to make changes, we would suggest they be made in the federal level, because for states, for our companies to have to deal with a multitude of different tax haven language from different states is, frankly, an administrative nightmare. If there are companies that are not paying their legal taxes, I would hope the Department of Revenue would go after them. We know we have a lot of auditors we've hired in the last couple of years. And the other states that have been mentioned that have tax haven legislation, from my read of the laws, they're not like what's in this bill. And this bill gives the Commission of Revenue the authority to decide what's a tax haven country. And, it, you know, we know from the list right now, the list as it's written is fairly obsolete. So I guess I'd just say that please keep in mind the jobs issue. You know, we've been talking a lot about jobs this session, and this will have an impact. We need to be more competitive, not less, and this, if we pass this, it'll make us less competitive. Thanks.
Thank you, Ms. Larson. Okay, closing comments from Representative Hornstein? And we have minutes to move, too, so let's not forget that.
Okay, well.
Representative Hornstein.
Madam Chair, members, thank you. A really, actually, good discussion, and very, very brief, just a couple of points. One is, I know there was some discussion about this issue of tax avoidance schemes, and I just want to say that the two of my testifiers, or testifiers in support of my bill, used this off of, you know, the IRS website, in which people may have issues with the IRS, I know that. But this is from a public sector website. No one is here deliberately raising the temperature. They're just using terminology that isn't a very commonly used website. So this is not, no one was here to raise the temperature. This is the terminology that they use, that our federal tax agency uses. Not, so that's, I wanted to clarify that. Secondly, you know, there was some discussion. I appreciated that Representative Downey used the word tinkering. You know, we're tinkering a little bit here, as we did in 2008. And so this, again, was something this committee passed and the governor signed in 2008, something similar. So we're just taking it to the next level. This is not, I would argue, a radical idea. And finally, we heard again rhetoric and arguments that I expected to hear about the business climate in Minnesota and the dire state of that. And again, I'm going from the Positively Minnesota website. This is the deed website, the administration's website. Business taxes lower than those in all but a handful of states. Minnesota's business taxes are very competitive, give companies a distinct advantage when it comes to the cost of doing business. We rank among the 13th lowest taxing states in the nation. Ernst & Young, our favorable business tax provisions help put us in the top six states to do businesses. So I think, again, we are tinkering with a system that needs to be reformed. And that's what this bill is. It's a simple reform measure. My understanding, and finally, Madam Chair, this is the last point I want to make, with regard to the tax havens, there's still, it hasn't been, it's not completely moot. There are negotiations still going on with these countries. Money is transferred there. This is a big business for these small islands. And the fact of the matter is, we know that there are revenues that should be in our general fund going there. So no matter what you think of maybe a couple of the other, you know, the FOC or foreign royalty, Representative Loeffler, I think you hit the nail on the head. This is a real big problem. And again, if nothing else, we ought to be really making sure that we address that particular piece. So again, Madam Chair and members, I think this is a reasonable and not radical reform that simply tinkers a little more with what we've already tinkered with. It's a good phrase, Representative Downey, and I'm glad you used it. And that's why, again, I think it's reasonable. This administration has worked with this concept in the past, and I think given our situation with our budget, both this biennium and next biennium, it's something worth looking at, and I appreciate the fact that this committee took so much time late at night to have a very rich discussion about it. So with that, Madam Chair, I'll conclude my comments.
Representative Mueller.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I just wanted to warn Representative that at your next convention, I'm going to let it be known that you just said you were carrying something that wasn't radical.
Well,
Representative Horton,
Madam Chair,
you radical.
You know, I did. This did remind me of the street utility hearing a couple years ago, Chair Lincheski. My legislation does seem to bring out a lot of heated feelings. I don't know if it's the beard, but again, good discussion, Madam Chair. So,
thank you, Representative Hornstein. We're going to lay this over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. And Representative Loeffler moves the minutes of April 26th. Discussion to the minutes. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed say nay. Motion carries. We're adjourned.